All right, everybody, welcome to Pro Photo Show. It's episode number 84 for May 2012. There's a whole lot of stuff going on in the news, lots to talk about. We got a great panel for you today. So let's jump in. Let's see what we got on the plate.
Welcome to Pro Photo Show, the resource for professional and enthusiast photographers, a member of the Blueberry Network and the Tech Podcast Network. For show notes, tips, forums, and more, visit us online at profotoshow.net.
All right, so it's Gavin Syme here, back from a four-month hiatus on the road, although I did get one podcast out while we were doing that trip. Really cool. Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit later, but we're back. It's been, again, a little too long between shows. It was a little hard to get them out on the road. I did get some of the Photo Couch episodes out, but we're back. I'm back here in the Command Center in Central Washington at the Syme Studios Super Complex. Well, it's actually pretty small, but we got a great panel today. We've got Dennis Zerwas. Hello, Dennis, from Minnesota. Good to have you back, buddy.
Hey, Gav. Good to hear from you.
And we have Mark Teske, another Minnesotan. And Mark's been on in the past as well. It's always fun to have you, Mark. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Gavin. Always a pleasure to be back on here again.
Great to have you. And Jonathan Belosky. Jonathan from up by the Vancouver area, right, Jonathan?
Other side of the country, but close enough. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Toronto.
Yeah, just outside of Toronto, Ontario. So
it's only a couple thousand miles. I've just driven 12. What's the big deal, right? Okay.
Yeah, but it's always great to be on the show, Gavin.
Glad to have you. And brand new on this episode, Gokhan Chukarova.
Excellent, okay. Excellent. Look at you, look at you.
From Gokhan, where are you from?
Chicago.
Chicago.
Yep.
Which is in Illinois, right?
I think so.
Just checking. Gokhan, since you're new on the show, we got Dennis. Dennis is...
what am I?
Sorry, Dennis. I just kind of brain farted right there. No, really, you are something. We all know Dennis.
I am something.
We've got Mark, who is, I guess you could say, our kind of our architecture guy. We got Jonathan, who does all kinds of cool commercial stuff. Dennis is, I guess I would say, weddings and portraits. Gokhan, you do a lot of weddings and stuff, just kind of giving people the lay of the land of who's here today in a very clunky fashion. That was very unprofessional. But Gokhan, give us kind of your 30-second bio. Tell us what you do and kind of what your thing is, just so people can get to know you real quick.
Sure. Thank you for the invite. Great to be here, Gavin. I'm a Chicago-based wedding photographer, and I've moved to Chicago about 4 years ago to marry my love.
Awesome.
Basically, do weddings and portraits, and also heavily involved in photography community here to raise the bar on photographers, especially newcomers' education here.
Super.
I also teach for PPA and PWPN.
Cool.
So that's pretty much it.
You just came back from a big workshop in Europe, didn't you, that you were teaching over there?
Yes. I've been teaching workshops, wedding photography workshops in Europe once a year. And we go to Krakow, Poland, which I call my second home now, and Prague. And hopefully next year we're going to add Budapest to it.
Now, are you from that area originally, or are you from
No,
here?
Actually, I am originally from Turkey. I was born and raised in Istanbul, and I was 23 when I moved to the U.S.
Very cool.
And picked up the camera after that. I had no camera, no nothing before.
Got
so,
to go later.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's great to have you. It's great to have you all, and we're going to have some fun here. So, first of all, let's jump in and just kind of take a look at random news. I got a list of a few things that we discussed in the pre-show, and if somebody comes up with something, that's great. The last show, I was kind of on the road. I didn't touch on the news a lot. But since then, I mean, while I was on the road, I went to Imaging USA. Of course, you know, there was massive trade show there, lots of stuff going on. There has been lots of new announcements since then. There's been new cameras released. We have Lightroom 4. We have Creative Suite CS6 about to come out. We have the 5D Mark III, the D800, the D3200. All this stuff going on in the industry, and quite frankly, lots of stuff to talk about. Who wants to kick it off? And maybe let's talk about some of these new cameras. What do you guys think? Big topic, huge topic right now. And we're not going to start a Canon Nikon fight so much as start a Canon and Nikon fight. So But really, what do you think? I mean, I guess wouldn't you say the big topic right now is 5D Mark III / D800? They're really different cameras. Frankly, I personally think they're both phenomenal. I've talked to some of you guys about this personally off the mic, and I think a little bit, you know, Nikon's kind of won this round just because they really have shaken things up. But both great cameras. What do we think about this? How about Mark? What do you got to say about all this?
Sure. You know, so I'm little disclosure, I am shooting with a 5D Mark III. I've had one for about 3 weeks now. And wow, what an awesome time to be a photographer.
You love it, huh?
Yeah, it's really a fantastic camera. You know, every little niggle I had with the 5D Mark II, and, you know, I had one of the earliest 5D Mark IIs, and I put probably 120,000 exposures on it and something like that. So I knew that platform extremely well. And you know, every little niggle I had with that, they fixed in the 5D Mark III. Everything I didn't think was awesome about that camera now is suddenly awesome.
Right.
So, you know, if that's your platform and that's the, you know, the camera that fits your usage pattern, wow, what an amazing improvement.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'll second that too, because like I'm a 5D Mark III shooter as well. We just got our pair about 3 weeks ago as well. And since then, we've been on two large commercial jobs where we put on over 10,000 frames on a camera, one of those. And very amazing with the files. Like you said, Mark, like everything that was in the 5D Mark II has been actually improved on. All my little issues, again, has been fixed. The actual color has been improved, I found, especially for our commercial work. And it's really an easy flow-through camera, especially now that there's the dual card slots, which is a huge advantage for when we're shooting to the iPads.
Right. So now, Jonathan, then, have you worked with the D800? Because you guys do such large commercial work and you have some of the really expensive large cameras, I would think you would have played with the D800 because of its resolution. Have you got into there at all, or...?
Yeah, we've played with the D800 and some of the larger res 35mm bodies like the Sonys and everything like that. But where we're finding is the need for when we need the speed and easeability of a DSLR, like a 35mm format, you know, 22 to 25 megapixels is more than enough. And we're even having clients saying dumb those down to 12 megapixels to 16 megapixels. But where we need the higher resolution, that's when we switch over to using our medium format camera bodies because of the larger sensor, the crisper, the less noise, and everything like that. So for my studio and for what we're shooting, I really don't see us picking up DSLR bodies above the 20 megapixel range. It's going back to where, you know, it takes too long to process your files afterwards. It takes too much hard drive space and too much card space, all that type of stuff.
And you have medium format stuff.
Exactly. Like if the job demands having a medium format or the larger files, well, then you shoot medium format. You know, it's like going back to film. Well, you know, reportage and the quick, you know, really, you know, candid type stuff was shot 35mm. Higher end advertising was either 6x9 or 4x5 or going 8x10 even. So, you know, it's picking the right tool for the right job. But for myself and my studio here, we don't think we'll actually tend to go up in more megapixels for the 35mm sets just for ease of use and speed and file size.
Now, coming back to that, I mean, here we have the D800, which is 36.3 megapixels, 4 frame per second. We have the 5D Mark III, 22.3 megapixels. It was definitely a surprise that Nikon jumped that much. Traditionally, Canon's kind of always been a little ahead of Nikon in terms of resolution. And you know, here we're kind of flip-flopping a little bit now. Nikon really jumped ahead. I was really skeptical about the rumors until this camera was announced because I'm like, nobody ever jumps that high in one shot. But in practical terms, I mean, from what I'm hearing, this camera is great. Frankly, it's a little disconcerting, I think, to people because I think for a lot of people, it's better than they expected it to be. For somebody that's doing high res, that's doing commercial applications, that wants to make those really large prints, from your experience with these cameras, would you say that the D800 in a lot of ways is a better choice? I mean, for somebody that doesn't have 60 grand to drop on a medium format system.
Yeah, like it's definitely a good choice, and I would recommend it for somebody that is looking to get the higher megapixels. But again, you have to remember your end use of the photos themselves.
Sure.
Like a lot of the designers that we're dealing with, their end use is for web only for a lot of the content we're developing. So do they really need that high of res?
Right.
So that's where it was. It's a tough choice. And also, we archive everything that we actually shoot. So it's one of those things that we were really, whenever we're doing a shoot, we talk to the client about, because archive space is getting huger and huger and huger, especially when you're processing them to TIFF files.
Sure.
Because like a 36 megapixel, like a 32 to 36 megapixel TIFF file is 200 megabytes in 16 bits. So like it's really large. And then like even when you're getting up higher and higher and higher now, it's like you need terabytes and terabytes and terabytes worth of backup drives in triple redundancy as well. So it's not just your use right in the need of it. You also have to think about your storage, and then also you have to think about your processing of your computers as well, because there's all these different factors. But for somebody that already isn't a Nikon platform and has no desire to switch over to like a medium format or anything like that,
right,
by all means, it's an amazing camera for an amazing price. Like, sure. When I started shooting commercial, I wish we could have had that quality of camera right off the bat.
For that price point. Very cool.
Exactly. Because then, you know, you can ease into it. You don't have to, like, to have two of those, one body and then a backup body, isn't a huge expense when you consider it.
No, it's a phenomenal price. I mean, it's less expensive than the Mark II. So, Dennis, you're, I think you may be the only resident Nikon. I'm not sure about GoCon. We'll check with you. But, Dennis, I know you're a Nikon shooter. So you're probably feeling good that Nikon has produced a camera that's worth owning. No, really, I do think that. Seriously, though, I mean, what do you think, Dennis? How do you feel about this?
Now you're starting to fight.
I'm taking the gloves off here. No, I'm kidding. I don't really care either way what people use, but I always like to pick on the Nikon users just because.
You all have the internet. You all know what's being said about it. So any 35 millimeter camera that can compete with, you know, different larger format, medium format, like the Phase 1 backs that can compete head-to-head and actually kind of beat them out in certain tests. Now, take that with whatever you will. I mean, I don't put a lot of stock into that kind of stuff. But if people who really geek out about testing sensors for things rate this camera as high as they do, then it obviously is a really nice piece. I call it a tool. Some people call these new cameras toys, but I actually make a living with them, so I actually call them tools.
Absolutely.
But it's a fantastic leap forward. But as we've always seen between Nikon and Canon and other manufacturers, it always is a seesaw back and forth, and the technology is only going to get cheaper and more condensed and better for everybody. So it's a very nice, I mean, I ordered mine 12 hours after it was announced, and I'm still waiting 90 days later. So and the place I ordered it from, B&H, is very good about sending out weekly, bi-weekly messages saying, hey, you know, we know you ordered this, that we have a very limited supply coming from Nikon. And it's one of the highest demand Nikon cameras we've ever, you know, carried. So
to clarify, then, are we getting the impression that Nikon's selling more of these than the Mark III, or is there less available?
Not even close. If I could answer, all that I'm reading from was just their message to me saying that it was one of the highest demanded Nikon cameras. I don't know. I didn't even actually know that the 5D Mark III had come out, because it kind of went, you know, the rumors and announcement came and went so fast, and it seems like the web is still buzzing about the Nikon D800.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with Jonathan's point of view. Not everybody who shoots Nikon needs this camera. I'd almost say 90% of the people who call themselves professional photographers need this kind of camera. It's for a specific purpose, very high quality. And a lot of people don't need that much bang for their buck.
Sure.
So the stat I saw on Twitter, and you know, it must be true since it was on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And I don't, you know, this was a quote from one of the major retailers. The one wasn't named, but according to that major retailer, they had sold 25 Mark IIIs to every D800.
So presumably there's just, because the D800s I think are way more backordered. You can go into a store and get a Mark III within, you know, I saw one on the shelf when we were in Utah.
Exactly.
So there's just way more of them.
Does that include pre-orders? I mean, who knows?
I don't know. It just says they said the Mark III had outsold the D800 25-1.
Right. Well, and I'm assuming that's only what shipped. I mean, because I know it's really hard to get a D800. I'm getting that impression.
They're selling for like between $3,700 and $4,000 on eBay new.
Wow. So what I need to do is get a couple dozen of them.
It's like a camera version of the Cabbage Patch in 1983.
I think this, no, Dennis, I think it's fair to say this is way more awesome than the Cabbage Patch.
You must not have had one then.
Wait, you had one?
I mean, my sister did. No, I had a, my sister did. It's all good.
Okay. Gokhan, well, have you talked yet? I don't think we've got you in there yet. What do you think?
Very quick note on last few things we talked about. I think D1DX was announced earlier. It's still not available as far as I know, correct?
Yes, correct.
And the D4 was announced a little after, and it's available now. It's kind of a weird thing. The 800 is taking a little longer. Well, it was announced later anyway. Since you gave some hard time to Nikon shooters, I have to fire back. So what do I shoot? I shoot Nikon. I switched to Nikon in 2009 after shooting Canon for 9 years.
Okay.
Right now I'm shooting with a D4 and a D700. The funny thing is that I ordered my D4 very first hour it was announced, because I've been waiting for about 2 years. Because I was waiting, I didn't jump up to D3S, which is a phenomenal camera. So my D4 arrived, you will not believe this, when I was at O'Hare getting ready to fly out to Europe for the workshop, same day. Can
right.
you imagine that?
Nice.
So I couldn't go there with the new camera, and that would be a terrific experience to get used to the camera.
Right.
But so far I love it, and as Jonathan said, you know, we all have to choose the right tool for the job. And I just posted a link. I hope you guys get to see it. I watched this on YouTube not long ago. They were comparing the Hasselblad H4 D40 versus mm-hmm. D800. And even though they're not the same, they're not in the same league, but the quality that's coming out of D800 is really, really impressive.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, and that seems to be the general consensus. I mean, it's good we have a two Nikons and two Canon guys here. And frankly, I mean, in reality, my opinion, I'm a little jealous of Nikon right now, because I'm a resolution guy. I do a lot of large prints, as you know, mm-hmm. and I've talked about, hey, you know, I work with 4x5 because I want that resolution. I mean, frankly, 36 megapixels still isn't even close to enough for me, but I'm like, ooh, I want that. I want that in the digital. So, I mean, my ideal would be if the D800 was a Canon camera. And I could buy both the 5D Mark III and the D800, because in practical, I know there's the DxO specs, and in the DxO spec, Nikon won everything. But I'm getting the distinct impression that in practical field use, the Mark III with video and with stills in real low light situations is winning in ISO. And probably some people that's going to annoy them, but I think that's
I think that's true, because I haven't touched one myself yet. On back order, as previously mentioned, but other photographers that I'm connected with who do have them in their hands say the same thing. You know, that's noisier in low light, but you've got enough, you know, megapixels to work with that you can actually run it through a noise reduction, you know, and barely make a dent into it.
Right.
But definitely, there are other, like the other cameras do have a better low light. Capabilities.
Yeah. So my ideal would be both. And that's the thing. I don't care. I love the fact that they're competing and that Nikon did this, because now Canon has mm-hmm. to do something to answer back. I mean, this is a huge jump that normally would take longer. To jump that many megapixels in a single unit, in a single model release, to me is pretty huge, because normally, you know, we've been going up 3-4 megapixels at a time, and suddenly mm-hmm. Nikon jumps up over 10 megapixels, 12 megapixels at a time.
Oh, it's even more than that. The D700 was 12 megapixels, and that's the one I primarily shoot, just like GoCon.
And love it, yeah. I love it.
The low light is ridiculous.
Yeah, at the end, us photographers are the winners, because they compete, we win. And if you notice, after D700, with the D800, 5D Mark III, dual card slots, 100% viewfinder, these are like getting more up to the top of the line level. By what they offer is getting better, because the fight is on.
Yeah, they're great. So, they're great tools, and the competition is phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Even just speaking quickly, as we probably want to move on through the new photo gear, but there's a Nikon also released and is already shipping
Wow.
8 days after it was released or announced, the D3200.
Yeah, and this is a phenomenal deal.
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is another thing where it's kind of cool that technology is advancing and getting cheaper, but it's also another thing to know that Uncle Joe is going to be holding 24 megapixels for $699 with a lens.
That's giving an awful big gun to Uncle Joe.
There Uncle Joe, he's a small game hunter.
Well, and just real quick on this D3200, 24 megapixels, 4 frame per second, ISO 100 to 6400, 1080p, $699 MSRP. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal. I think that's the kit, too, which is probably a cruddy lens. But the reality is that this thing will probably be $549, $599, something like that, which is, and that's another pattern I see that Nikon's doing some really value stuff. I mean, Canon seems to be raising their prices. Nikon seems to be lowering those, which I think needs to be taken into account. I mean, people say, well, the Japanese yen is worth more. And you know, I'm not going to make excuses for Canon. They came out with a camera, and basically what it comes down to is they say people will pay it, so we're going to charge more, I think, is where we're at. Mm-hmm. And the 5D Mark III, I held one. I used one the other day. It's beautiful. The ergonomics, the viewfinder, the focus points, the speed. It feels great in the hand. It's fast. I haven't used a D800 yet. Frankly, for me, where I'm at right now, I'd love to have both of them. If I were to choose one or the other, not including the lenses, I might go with the D800. But I'm not to the point where I'm willing to switch either. I got all this Canon glass and all that kind of stuff. They don't make it easy on us to switch. And frankly, I think because of the competition, Canon will come back and answer something. But yeah, it's great. So anyway, Mark, did you have any closing thoughts on the 5D3? Because I know you've been using it quite a bit. Just real quick.
Yeah, I just wanted 1 minute to talk about the video. I actually upgraded because of the video, not the picture quality. Mm-hmm. Shooting architecture, Moiré in the 5D2 just about killed me. There was really bad Moiré problems with it, and they've completely fixed that in the 5D3. The video is beautiful. Also, the low light performance in video is really spectacular. Shooting indoors without lights, I was often at ISO 3200, and it's shocking how much cleaner the video is. And something that doesn't really come out is that I found both in terms of the video and the RAW file, it's a lot more elastic than the 5D2 files were. Like the 5D2 video files, once you started to adjust those things, they would break down really, really quickly. Like yeah. You couldn't brighten them much at all, and they'd start falling apart.
Yeah.
There's a lot more latitude in the 5D3 video files to sharpen them and bring out shadows and stuff like that. That's really pretty spectacular. And by the time you're done with it, it's a good looking video.
Now, Mark, I think you said, and I think you sent me this, maybe you can get it to me for the show notes, but I think you said there was a kind of a practical real use video where they did D800 versus the Canon. Didn't they do some video and stuff with it and kind of compared the two and what they could do and it was pretty informative, so maybe you can send that my way too. And again, in the low light, I think in practical use, the Canon came out on top, which is no surprise. But
yeah, it's the camera store up in Canada. Is actually they did one round where it was studio work, and they gave the win to the D800. And then they did some low light rodeo indoor stuff, and they gave the win to the 5D3.
So bottom line is they're both phenomenal cameras. Which one do you like? And this is a good thing to take over to the forums, profotoshow.net/forum. There'll be show notes for this show, and you know, head over and give your opinion. So you know, what are the ups and downs? I see ups and downs of both, and frankly, I wish they were both in my hands right now with a full set of lenses. So I mean, what do you do? Okay, let's move on. We may need, there's been some other cameras, a lot going on in the video world. We may try and bounce back to that if we have a few minutes, but let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on in the software world. Lightroom 4, Photoshop, CS6. I think most of us here are working with Lightroom 4. Any thoughts? What are you guys thinking on Lightroom 4?
Well, I got on Lightroom 4, soon after it was announced. I watched a few tutorial videos from Terry White, and it was sold right there. And I think the performance of the software itself has dramatically improved. So I'm very happy with that.
So you're liking it. You give it the thumbs up.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
You know, I had a couple of really weird little corner things I was really hoping they'd add in, thinking there's no way they'd ever add it in, and they added them, and it's made my life so much better. What the improvements they've made to the local adjusting brush have changed my life, with the ability to spot sharpen on that and the ability to change white balance on the local adjustment brush is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, that was because, cool.
Totally agree,
Yeah, when you're shooting interiors, a lot of times you have some severe white balance difference between indoor and outdoor, especially on a cloudy day. and being able to just take the local adjustment brush, throw it up about, you know, throw it up a little bit more yellow and rub it across the windows to just fix that is awesome. And also their ability to control shadows, how they've kind of redone the basic sliders, really allows a much better quality image and be able to manage the shadows better and the highlights better. You can now just take that highlight slider, just slam her all the way to the left, and it really only darkens the windows and nothing else inside the scene. It's pretty cool. The recovery slider, when you started banging it really hard to the left, would make every white in the room really, really gray.
Yeah, it would look like the Flickr HDR.
Yeah, it would make everything really muddy, whereas yes. The highlight slider does not do that.
Yeah, yeah. Dennis, you are not using Lightroom 4 yet, are you?
I'm not, and I didn't even really pay attention to like what was new in it. So right. I actually took that opportunity to go and see the Lightroom 4 seminar by Matt Kloskowski, one of the Photoshop guys.
Yes, absolutely.
So I went into that actually not knowing like what was new in Lightroom 4. And also, too, just to see how far that course has come. Right. I mean, as you know, we both have been involved in Lightroom since the beta, before even Lightroom 1.
Right.
So it's very cool to see how far this program has come, you know, with the addition of being able to actually do a little bit of lightweight editing of your video. I mean, even just the upgrade price of $80 just to be able to view your video in Lightroom is totally worth it.
Yeah.
And they've also added a few other cool features like being able to do books right inside Lightroom. But like Mark said, the sliders, the readjustment of the sliders just makes more sense, at least for my brain. So I was also happy to see that. And it was also interesting, too, to see that there's some parts that they just really haven't touched, like the web module and the slideshow. It's pretty much like it's one of those back burner things, and I can see why, because most people are doing their cooking on the front end with the library and develop and the print module.
Yes.
And they're kind of letting the web and the other slideshow just kind of simmer.
I'd love to see some better non-flash galleries in the web module, because they're really elegant and clean. They're in Java or HTML5 or something. I was really hoping for that. But.
Well, what was humorous is that we actually, and I didn't know this, but I guess the Twin Cities here has an office for Adobe here, which actually does a lot of the work on Lightroom, or some of the key work gets done in Lightroom is actually done here in the Twin Cities. And we had about probably a dozen people from the office in the audience for this presentation.
Nice.
But, and what's funny is that Matt Kloskowski actually had the guts, I'll say, to flat out say to the audience that whatever your question is to the web module, the answer is no. Can I do this? No. And the crowd loved it, but to be able to just, for him to actually come out and just basically slam Adobe.
Call it like it is,
And in front of a dozen of those people.
That's how you get things done.
And that is also how you get respect in this industry, is to come out and say stuff like that. So I found it very interesting, but definitely now with the upgrade price only $80 instead of the usual $150, and the full price going from $300 to $150, it's a great, and thank you, Aperture.
Thank you, Apple, for that. Yes.
I think it's a great buy.
Excellent. And Jonathan, you haven't talked yet. What do you think?
Yeah, so our studio was actually very forced into the upgrade of Lightroom 4 because of the introduction of our 5D Mark 3s. And, you know, we definitely aren't upset at all about going to it because, like everybody was saying before about the sliders, for our work, it makes 100% more sense for the actual smoother gradations. It's little transitions and little tweaks that we were looking for. And with all the additions of the things of selective changing of all the color temperatures and everything like that, our Photoshop usage, like our actual Photoshop usage, has gone down drastically. Like, I think the only thing that we actually hop into Photoshop to do now is our cloning, and that's basically it. Like our complex cloning or our composites and everything like that. But for our mainstay, it's almost 90% Lightroom work now. So It's using four, especially with the accelerated processing speeds and everything like that, especially on the Macs, it's really, really helpful. The one thing I am finding a little bit of a lag on right now is before Legroom 3 would import our like 5D Mark II files very, very quickly. Lightroom 4 is actually taking a little bit longer to actually just chug them in and generate the previews. I don't know whether it's because I'm running the newest beta version of it or it's, you know, it's just still not up to 100% yet for that. But but overall, like, it's an amazing software. For the price, you cannot beat it. Like, for a lot of people, that's pretty much all they'll be in is Lightroom versus popping anywhere else. And for the price, like everybody said,
yeah, it's a good deal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Overall, I think Lightroom 4 is good. It's also not a crazy expensive upgrade like sometimes we get in the Creative Suite and stuff like that. So it's pretty reasonable. The video feature alone for me takes it. I'm not a huge video guy, although I've been doing a lot of videos and stuff for my new Exposed series and for my video workshops and things like that. So not only being able to manage it, but frankly, I've been doing basic edits and videos. I've been releasing promo videos for my upcoming video workshop that's coming out this summer. And, you know, the primary edits on those were just basic color correction and stuff like that done right in Lightroom and then exported out. And I've been doing some mixing and screen flow and stuff like that. And then I go to Premiere if I need to. But the video module is good. I wish we could go into the develop module to work with video. I realize all the sliders aren't available, but there's actually a surprising amount of things you can do to a video besides just the brightness. There's more that are listed in the quick develop module. And yet the only way to get to those is to, you know, do them on a still and then paste them over. On that note, I did post some free presets on my website on simfx.com specifically geared toward video that only use features that are available for the video files. So you can check those out if you're tinkering with video on the SimFX blog. And I've been playing with those just to see what we can do in terms of editing video. Overall, like I say, I like Lightroom 4. I don't find it that much faster, nor do I find it that much slower in my experience. It seems about the same. The book module, I think, is kind of a joke, to be quite frankly. I think it's cool that they have it, but you can't really do custom layouts and do your own thing. So for me, it in no way replaces what I can do in something even on a basic level, like an InDesign or something like that. So, I mean, without the basic functionality to control layouts, the book module to me is kind of a waste of time. And yet, you know, that's not to say there's not use for it for some people. It depends on what you're doing, but I'm not that into it. Develop module, all the changes there. By the way, as a quick little plug, all three of my Lightroom preset collections, Power Workflow, Silver Shadows, and Color Fantasies, have all been updated to be compatible. And for your current users, that's a free upgrade if you didn't get those emails. But they're all compatible now. And I had to go through and rebuild everything for Lightroom 4 and update it to work with those changed sliders. On the upside, I really love the fact, and most people probably weren't as peeved about this as I was, but I really love the fact that the settings on a JPEG and a RAW file, a PSD and a RAW file, all the files use the same baseline and they use the same settings. So while I had to do a lot of work, it's a really welcome thing that I can use the same preset on a PSD that I've edited or on a RAW file. Because in the previous, Lightroom 1, 2, 3, if you applied a preset made for a RAW to a JPEG, a PSD, a TIFF, any of those, the outcome would be entirely different because the baseline of that file that Lightroom applied to it was different. All that's been equalized now. So one file is the same as the next in terms of what its zeroed out sliders are for the general develop settings. So that's really cool. And overall, I'm liking the performance. I'm liking the new features in Lightroom 4. Loving the video options and that they've actually given us some editing features. I would have been happy just to be able to view video and to manage it, put some tags to it and stuff like that. So growth there. But definitely, I think it's a worthy upgrade for what it costs. Good?
Good.
Everybody covered it. And with that, boy, we're getting long into news here. I want to keep it moving. CS6 is not out yet. Does anybody have any thoughts on CS6? I've not done all my homework. I've been on the road. I'm not seeing anything too earth-shattering. It looks like some new content-aware stuff and kind of some nice new features. But frankly, compared to Lightroom, you know, these Lightroom upgrades, don't completely change everything in Lightroom, they're also not really that expensive. Whereas Photoshop, I mean, if you have extended Photoshop, it's like $300 or $400 for this upgrade. And I'm a little bit feeling like, you know, gosh, Adobe keeps coming out with more Photoshop, more Creative Suite. And frankly, the features are pretty minor for what it costs. Am I crazy there, or are we kind of on the same page?
No, I think we're on the same page on CS6. Yes, there are improvements, but for what you spend, I don't think it's a major upgrade. And I think I'm on CS5 right now, and I think I'm good to go. I mean, I only go into Photoshop just for if I need to do some dodge and burn, or as we all know, the clone tool is, of course, right there. Wish it was in Lightroom, but then what would be the difference between them?
Right. Well, and to be clear, you know, somebody mentioned that they hardly use Photoshop anymore. I still don't think Lightroom's taken the place of Photoshop. It's getting better and better. And not, Jonathan, you were saying it's taken the place of it. Just, I shouldn't misquote you. But I still go into Photoshop for almost every image that goes to print. I mean, if there's an image that's serious and I'm finishing it, I can still have more control, not only the cloning, but in burning and dodging and detailed tonal control. And if I do everything I can to an image in Lightroom, and I do a ton of work in Lightroom, it saves me a lot of time. But then if I say, okay, this is the one I'm going to go to print with, then I go to Photoshop and do the Photoshop refinements, I come back and I say, wow, that's a lot of difference. You know, it's a good thing, yeah. I went to Photoshop. So
And that's the way it was intended, because Lightroom was never meant to be the Photoshop killer, obviously. Mm-hmm. Adobe's not that stupid.
No.
But, you know, it was just meant to get you 90%, 95% of the way there. And just like you said, you go into Photoshop and then you put the little cherry on top.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
That's exactly what we do. Like, we basically do all our batch processing in Lightroom, which is 90% of the file processing that we do. But then our mastered selects, we go into Photoshop to do all the full refinements. But, you know, you have your base, you do all your processing. It's like sending everything off to the lab. You get your E6 film back from the film days. Yeah. And then you'd scan your film and then just master the file. And it's, you know, very much similar into video techniques of mastering the video now,
right,
that we use Photoshop to master the files.
Jonathan, so,
yep.
I'm still in the film days.
Yeah, exactly.
Me too, right here. Yeah.
But no, you're right. And I think, I mean, you know, we've been talking about Lightroom from the beginning. You know, it's a huge workflow. I've always said Lightroom does 90% of what Photoshop does 5 times faster. So I'm just saying that I think that 10% is still relevant for your best images, for your, you know, this is your final, this is the one going to master. But I think, frankly, from what I'm seeing, and I haven't used the new CS6 yet. I was on the road and the beta download was huge for my MiFi and I had lousy internet and all this stuff. So I'm just going to wait till it comes out and I'll play with it. And we'll talk about that a little more next time. But it looks like, you know, some new features and, you know, lens corrections, some new selection tools, some new content aware tools. So some little refinements to things that are going to be cool. The question is for you, how much do you use it? How much do you need it? Is it going to be worth the money? I think for a lot of people, the answer is going to be no, but some people will probably find some features there that, hey, maybe they're really cool. And who knows, maybe the content aware fill tools will actually get as good as they were advertised in CS5.
No, I think there might be a lot of people who went for CS5 and are still a little gun shy after their experience.
I think,
content aware wasn't as magical as it first was advertised.
What do you mean? Didn't you watch the video? It said.
Oh, I watched the video. They got my money, which I can only run on 2 machines. Don't get me started.
I've seen that too. That video fooled a lot of people, but also watching. No, it wasn't me. No, I actually been happy with the content aware tool, even probably because I don't use it so much. But I, you know what we say, like, do it in the camera. A lot of times when we shoot weddings, we have to, you know, pay attention to what's in the back. So if you have a street light pole behind the groom's head, you know, that's gotta go. And I mean, when you pay attention to those things when you're shooting, you're gonna need those tools less and less.
Right. Yeah. And nothing replaces. Boy, I'm getting a huge. I've been a beaten this drum a lot lately. Nothing replaces visualizing and planning it right in the camera.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and if you get in that mode of, yes, I'm going to visualize, yes, I'm going to plan, pretty soon you get to the point where even when you only have 2 seconds to make a decision, you're still doing that because it starts to become more and more subconscious and you start to do things right instead of fixing it later. And yes, we can do a lot in Photoshop. That doesn't mean it won't take us 6 hours and 5 years of Photoshop experience to make that happen. So we don't want to go back to CS5 too much. I like content aware fill. I think the bottom line with that, I think it's useful. It's just another tool, though. It wasn't the magic we all expected it to be, and that's what it was billed at.
I think they used
it to sell CS5 is what happened.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There is no magic wand. That's basically what it is.
Well, Photoshop already has that.
And it seems like it's one of those things that when it works, it's incredible.
Yeah,
and
you're like, wow,
it's absolutely magical. And
it's
then
just that it works 1 out of 20 times.
I find it more like 50% of the time, but I've also kind of discovered what scenarios it works well and which ones it doesn't.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't want to talk for an hour on CS6. It looks mildly interesting, I guess, at this point, but I'm not sure if it's. We'll see what happens when it comes out. Maybe it'll be more earth shattering than I think, but probably not. That's just kind of the way things work. So I'm Gavin Syme, and this is The Way Things Are. I just wanted to say that. Let's move on. Anybody else have anything that we haven't covered? Real quick, and let's not take forever on this because we're going to get too long on the news. I'd like to get into some other topics, but we haven't talked about a lot of news in a while. A lot going on in video. This isn't a video show, but we got the 1DX. Well, of course it does video, but that's more of a non-video camera. Is it the 1DC that's the one that's kind of geared more toward video? Do I got that right?
Yeah, Canon just released two new cinema cameras to add to their C300 that they announced about 6 months ago.
Right.
They announced the C500, which is kind of the big brother to that, and really has things that, if you're a Hollywood studio, would be interesting. What's kind of more interesting in our niche is they introduced the 1DC, which is really a 1DX body that does 4K video.
Now, can we pause there? Because for those of you that are doing video, we don't even have a screen that'll display 4K video. I know it's like future proof and all that, but I don't even want to think about how long my computer would take to render that. What is the use in practical terms for 4K video? Why is Canon so focused? They seem to be more focused on video than innovating stills lately. Why is that?
Well, that is kind of the big question right now, that why is 4K important? And the answer is, if you're not in Hollywood, it isn't important.
And if you're in Hollywood, you're buying a different. You're not going to buy a DSLR style camera anyway. Well, I guess it's cheap relative to Hollywood cameras, so it might be a good one to use. If it's going to get run over by a train or something.
Right. Yeah. You use it as a B camera. Where you've got it like set in the back of a car that's going jumping over something, it's not your main camera, but you have them propped all over the place for alternate angles.
Yeah. You could strap it to the tires or to the wheel wells or do whatever you want to at that point, probably.
Which seems insane to do with a $15,000 camera, but
yeah, but less so than doing it with a $200,000.
Yeah.
So and so we have the 1DC now, but now the 1DC contrasting to like the C300 is a DSLR, so it's also a still camera. It's
that
like a 1DX with more video features and more expensive. Am I kind of getting that roughly right?
Yep, you basically hit it right on the head.
Okay. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's not out yet, and neither is the 1DX for that matter. I'm not sure what the holdup is there, but we'll see. And then, of course, the new cinema stuff. So rather than, we're not going to get into reviews of all that because I don't think any of us, nobody here has like a C300 or anything like that. We're more still guys than video guys overall, I would say. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Canon definitely seems to be going this video way, so...
Well, I will call out really briefly, Canon suddenly got a new competitor I don't think they saw coming. Last month, or just a few weeks ago, was the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters
right.
show. And Blackmagic, a company that's made cinema accessories for the 5D Mark II, like external hard drive recorders and all kinds of other things, announced their own camera called the Blackmagic Design Cinema Camera. And
right.
this kind of did everything everybody hoped the 5D3 would do for video and everything they hoped the 1DC would do. And it's a 2.5K image sensor, so that's basically 1080p high def. It outputs raw, high dynamic range, and it takes Canon lenses. And that's going to be available, and it records out raw to an external hard drive.
Wow.
And that little baby is going to be available for $3,000.
Isn't that phenomenally cheap?
Yeah, it's going head-to-head against cameras that are $15,000. So
right.
The pre-orders were brisk on that one, from what I can tell.
Interesting. Well, that'll be so. Yeah, I mean, in the video, if this was a video podcast, we'd be going nuts and drooling right now. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff popping in the video world. A little less so in the still world, but it's all advancement. So we'll see what happens, and it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Any other thoughts from any of you on this stuff? Have we covered it, or any other input on here? It was Imaging USA. I just want to give a quick kind of feedback review on that. A lot of the stuff, huge trade show there, but not so much anything that's earth-shattering. It didn't seem like they were announcing new products at Imaging so much as a lot of the big guys, a lot of the small guys were at Imaging in the trade show. But a really neat conference. If you get a chance to go to Imaging, I thought it was pretty impressive. I mean, just their dinner parties that were part of your Imaging registration. I mean, they had live bands and seafood and all this stuff, which is not, you know, how does that matter to learning photography? Well, not so much other than the fact that they really went all out on their conference. This is not your local photo club. I mean, this was something else. And a lot of good presenters, a lot of good speakers and programs and big names up there. And GoCon, I mean, you're involved with PPA, and I'm somewhat involved with PPA.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you've been to Imaging, you know, many times, but I was pretty impressed with it.
Lately, I've been kind of disappointed with PPA's management, I should say, and right. I'm not really afraid of saying this out loud. First off, their support for SOPA.
Oh, that ticked me off. That was ridiculous.
That wasn't acceptable at all. I called them and I complained about that actually more than once. And also, they've been kind of slow on getting into the Professional Photographers magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And you would expect that it's one of my favorite magazines, and I read it religiously, and it's not available for iPad. You know, I mean, just little things that you think they right. would be on top of things.
Right.
But other than that, yes, I am a proud member and definitely urge people to take a look into it. Sure. But of course, there are a few things that ticks me off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wasn't a very proud member when I got the condescending letter telling us we were all idiots if we were against SOPA.
Yeah,
HIPAA.
That was amazing.
I was shocked, and I made my voice very clear on that. And I know some people canceled their memberships. I mean, that was just idiocy. So I guess my review is speaking more on the fact that the Imaging USA, I felt like was a valid, you know, there was a lot going on. It was a pretty exciting time, and it was really cool. And PPA has been making some nice moves in terms of value adds. I mean, you know, if you're a member of PPA, you can automatically opt in for free equipment insurance. That's like, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's up to $15,000 or $20,000 on your equipment. So some
yeah,
really
that's
good value.
Really valuable.
There. Yeah, I mean that was. I thought I'm like, wow, that's a smart move. You're going to get a lot of new people who haven't. You know, who don't have equipment insurance because you don't have to pay extra for it. So you can jump
Definitely.
Right in and get some coverage. And they've helped me in the past with some legal advice and stuff like that. So overall, I've done well with them. But yeah, they're not perfect. So I guess we don't need to get into a rant about that. But in any case, I went to Imaging. I met some of you there. So shout out. And I enjoyed it. That's the bottom line. Anyway.
Hey, Gavin, just yes. I haven't been to Imaging USA, but so many of the shows these days are very, very focused at portrait and wedding photographers. How was the track at Imaging USA for commercial photography?
I didn't feel like it was just, you know, weddings and senior portraits. I mean, they had people there talking about fine art. I guess in answer to your question, Mark, I don't have a very good answer. I felt like
just curious.
I felt like overall there was a pretty broad variety. There was always lots of programs happening, you know, during the program time of day, and there was good stuff that you could go see. And I didn't feel like it was the whole thing where, you know, all we're talking about is chicks who click and senior model programs and how to use Lightroom. I mean, there was that too, but I felt like there was a fairly diverse range of things to deal with.
Yeah, cool. Thanks.
Anyways, with that, I think we'll maybe move on into some other things, and we'll get into maybe a couple lightning rounds, get into some picks. I want to take a break real quick to throw in a little plug for the new project I'm working on. I've just driven 12,000 miles running all over the country, and if you go to my website, f164.com/maps, and look for the green pins on there, that's basically where I've been over the course of this trip. So it was really cool. I'm not going to get into everywhere I went and everything I did, although I do have lots of things to talk about and some good stuff that I learned there. But one of the main things I was working on during this trip is the new Exposed series. And it's a video workshop that's taking it to a whole nother level in terms of what I've done, because it's actually out in the field as I was roaming around in the country, dealing with different situations, different locations, different light, talking about everything from meters to the zone system to managing exposure. And then we're going to bring all that home. I'm going to be talking about working with it in post-production and getting that finished image exactly the way we want. So the goal of this workshop is to have, you know, it's a 3-4 hour workshop that you can download or get on DVD that's everything exposure, but not just, you know, where exactly to set your exposure, but how to visualize and manage and see your exposure, get it right in the camera, and carry that visualization all the way through to your finished image. And I'm really excited about it. I think I have almost 200 videos I recorded while on the road, just collecting all these clips for the different topics, then going to be taking screencasts back in the studio, mixing all that together. And that is scheduled to release this July. It's available for pre-order on my website. And if you pre-order it, you get it for half price, and which is $49. So if you pre-order before, I can't remember the date, but there is a cutoff date coming up here real soon. And if you pre-order that, you'll get it for half price. And after that date, the pre-order is going to go to $75. And then after that, when it comes out, it's going to go to $99. And it's a little more for the DVD because I have to ship out that DVD and print it and package it and all that kind of stuff. But I'm really excited about this. This is, I think, going to be the best contribution I've ever made to photography. And yes, I'm hoping that it's profitable, but I've really been putting myself into this one, and I'm really excited about it. SeimEffects.com, SEIMEffects.com/exposed. You can check out some of the promo videos, lists of what we're going to be covering, and of course, you can order the pre-order right from there. So I'm getting a little long, but I'm really excited about this. It's a business venture, but it's also a passionate thing. I want us to expose better. I want us to better understand zones and tone control and managing all this stuff, not only to make our life easier, but to get our images better, because the better an image is in camera, the better it is when we're finished. It just gets that much better if you balance good in camera and then proper post-production, and we're going to cover all that in the Expose series. So check it out, SeimEffects.com/expose. That's a little bit of news and definitely a plug for me, but I just wanted to shout that out. And moving on, what do you guys want to talk about? Chirp, chirp. Look at this. I always have to lead. What is wrong with that? I mean, I'm the host. Why should I have to host? All right.
You want to talk about Instagram being bought by Facebook?
doesn't Facebook buy everything? I mean, pretty soon Facebook will be buying Pro Photo Show, and well, no, they won't. I would sell it. No, for like $40 million. That's what they always pay, is huge amounts of money.
So if you take a step back and look at this, I mean, that company is something like 500 days old, and there was, what, 18 people that worked there, and in that 500 days, they managed to create something using photography that had a street value of $1 billion.
Is that how much they paid? That's pretty amazing.
That's unbelievable.
That is, yeah, it is. Frankly, I'm not an Instagram guy at all. I mean, I get so tired of these, like, cheesy effects applied to photos that are nothing but cruddy snapshots in the first place. I have no problem if people want to use Instagram. I just never really got into it. You know, I'm like, if I'm going to take a snapshot, I'm not going to pretend it's some rare piece of art. But, hey, wah, wah. Man, I just brought down the...
Well, I don't think that's what most people are looking at it as. It's basically a Facebook, but with pictures, is what it initially was. It's just a social media site only using pictures and captions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but how I see it used is everybody would go to Instagram, they would take a snapshot that wasn't really very good, and it was out of focus, and it was blurry, and it was out of composition. They would add some weird vintage retro 70s effect, and then they just post it to their Facebook. And I'm like,
welcome to photography 2012, Gavin.
Okay, so anyway, I know people love Instagram, that's fine, and more power to them. If I had invented it, I would have $1 billion right now. So that's really what I'm ticked off about.
Dennis nailed it. Really, it's about Facebook trying to stay ahead of the game on what people are doing with social networks. You know, they tried to do that with location services, and now they're looking at it and saying, hey, there's this whole social network built around taking pictures of what you're doing, and we can either grow it or we can buy somebody. And yeah, if we just buy the one that everybody's using, bam, we're
then
there.
You got it. Wouldn't it be nice if you had the money to, like, any competition that comes up that you think might be relevant, you just buy them, and just in case?
Well, they're the top dog right now, and look at, I mean, using Microsoft as an example, when you're the top dog, there's only one direction you can go, so they've got to try to buy up all the assets and whatever they can do to keep, you know, be the place where everybody from you to your grandma are all logged in. They're fighting for that, so whatever it takes, they'll do it.
I know Facebook's all revolutionary, and they're always doing something new and cool, but frankly, I would be satisfied just to be able to sort my photo albums. Which that feature seems to have gone away. I don't know why, but anyways, okay.
Has anyone heard about this very unique iPhone application called Photoverse?
I'm not aware of that one.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat application, and I've become friends with the developer because I had some iPhone app ideas, and I actually did contribute some to Photoverse, and it was nice getting your ideas out and see people behind the doors behind those applications actually listening and taking a note of your ideas and suggestions. So actually a few days ago we were actually doing a video chat on Skype here, and the subject came to Instagram, and I'm like, how can a free app make $1 billion? But the power behind that marketing, all this information that's being put out by 27 or 30 million users, that's the value right there. Amazing. Amazing.
Right. And which of you, I mean, I don't currently use Instagram. I think I have an account and I probably posted a few things, but do any of you use it heavily?
I don't use it heavily, but I actually have put maybe like close to 500 photos over a while now. It's just like, you know, I do shoot weddings for a living, but I also am in love with daily life street photography as well. And when I grab a moment, I'll put it up there, share it with a small audience there. And I think if I keep that right, I have 1,200 followers, and I'm following 80-some. And there's some really talented people out there, even though I think Instagram should be for photographs that's produced in iPhone. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people out there sharing photos that they photograph with, say, D3S, which and I kind of find funny, but yeah.
Yeah.
But on the other side, though, what I have accomplished with that was, because I love networking, and I am a big believer of your network is your net worth, and before I left for Europe, I've met a couple of people from Poland who are photographers over there, working photographers. So, you know, it's actually because a lot of people are putting a lot of content from, especially from their personal life or their environment. Mm-hmm. So if you want to see a different version of a city, say like New York City, put a tag on there, it's going to bring you a lot of photos. So it's actually a great resource if you want to see things a little differently. So I was typing in Krakow, and I found a couple of great photos that gave me some inspiration. And then I actually became friends with one of the commercial photographers in Krakow. At the end of our workshop, we had a party, and I invited him, and we got to meet, and it was great. So we just started a friendship that was excellent.
Got it. And how about you, Mark? Do you use Instagram at all?
You know, I don't. You know, since we're talking about photo sharing and so forth, I don't use Instagram. I've got an account. I've tried it. It didn't really work for me, but the one on my iPhone, the one I use all the time is Camera Awesome, which is from SmugMug. And that's a really amazing application in terms of what they allow you to do on there. And just the ability to actually separate out being able to set a focus point and a exposure point in two different points on the screen is pretty cool. So that's what I use for that. And as far as social networking for photography, do any of you guys use 500px, 500px.com?
I did when they first came out, and I kind of got tired of it pretty fast. But
you did? You did?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking about that. I took down my website that was only for street photography and nature photography. Anything doesn't have a bride in a bridal dress. I had a different site for it. And mid last year, I took it down and I wanted to explore a little bit different options because I never got into Flickr, even though Flickr's community or interactions are awesome. You have really great people out there. But I think Flickr fell way behind when it comes to updating that themselves and catching up on the new technology or new design or user friendliness. So, you know, my group on Facebook, Chicago Photographic Society, I put it up there and say, what do you guys think and what do you suggest? I'm thinking about a new venue for my photography that's not wedding related. And 500px was the winner. And I didn't sign up with anybody yet. There is also 1X, and yes. there are other options too. But so far, I've been so busy since I came back from Europe. I also shot a medium format film over there, so I got to do a lot of scanning. Finally got my film developed. But one quick addition to Camera Awesome, we had two photo walks in Chicago this past weekend, and one of my photographer friends, Cynthia, she was taking pictures with her iPhone and on a little tripod, and she was using Camera Awesome doing a time lapse. So what I did at a local Wolf camera store, they had $1 8x10 deals. So just to see how good this camera is, we all know, I mean, probably everybody knows that the camera in new iPhone 4S is much better than any other iPhone previously. Yeah. So what I did, I just walked out of my house and walked down the street and took like four or five shots, just like random shots, and got those printed 8x10 and went to a coffee shop to meet another photographer friend for coffee. I'm like, here a couple of shots from my Mamiya 645. Look at this resolution. And he was like, oh, wow, that's pretty impressive. So I'm like, no, these are from iPhone. And it was incredible. Of course, when it comes to, like, when you print smaller from whatever you're printing, you don't see the difference. But I think the camera in iPhone 4S is so far the best I've seen in a phone.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I guess my only comeback to that would be I have a 4S. I've been using it the entire vacation for snapshots, and it's great for mm-hmm. it. But, I mean, to me, I don't care if I can print an 8x10 because I don't consider an 8x10 print relevant for most art. I mean, it's just, to me, an 8x10 is a throwaway. And I'm not knocking what you did. I think it's cool that it can do that. You know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get your point because you and I both shoot 4x5 film, so we know how that
how
goes.
Good it
yeah.
can actually.
Yeah. But, as you know, again, from a phone, that's right. incredible.
It's good. But on the note, I guess we're getting a little off task of 500 pixels. I don't know if anybody else has been using it. I think we did talk about it kind of when it came out. I like the interface. I thought it was fun. You know, you had this voting system, and if your image got enough votes, it could get right up the top. And I guess the problem, what kind of came down is that the interaction was basically just, you know, post things and everybody goes and says, they either don't comment or they say how great it is, you know, because nobody wants to actually, you know, offend somebody because then they might come to their photos and vote them down, you know. And also there was this thing where a photo, let's say you took a great photo, you put it on 500 pics and it gets votes and it gets ranked really high and people are liking it. Well, it's also a time rank thing. So what would bother me is that you'd have a photo that might rank 85 or whatever, you know, whatever the high score is, 90, whatever. And 3 weeks later, it might go down to 60, which is, that's how their algorithms work. Gradually it goes down so other stuff can shift up. That's fine, but it wouldn't show you what it ever got to. It didn't show you the rank. So ostensibly, your photo that 2 weeks ago, what might have been number one on the entire site, now when people look at it, they have no idea. You know, it might have just been another one of those okay ones, and they had no idea. I guess that kind of annoyed me about it. Frankly, I felt like people gave some input, and 500 pics didn't really respond. And they just kind of did their thing. And I don't know. I haven't seen a whole lot of excitement about it lately. Anybody else using it?
Yeah, actually. So what I find interesting about it is I find the quality of the images much, much, much higher on 500px than yes. many of the other photo sites. Like, I'm actually amazed at the quality of the pictures on there. And what's also interesting is they've added the ability to sell pictures out of there, and they've got a fixed price. And you know, right off the bat, I instantly was offended by their pricing because you could buy a high def version of your picture for $3, I think it is, and that's what it is. And you could buy a I think an 18x24 gallery wrap for $199, which, you know, for those of us that are doing fine art, you know, would prefer to charge much
yeah,
more than that for our images.
That's just.
But what happened is I realized, I said, well, you know, shoot, there's a bunch of people out here seeing my stuff that may not otherwise. So, you know, what if I turn the basket on? So what? If I make any money off of it, hey, it's gravy. That was a sale I was never going to make anyway. And darn if I didn't get contacted by several people once I posted an Amsterdam shot that I had taken. from my recent trip to Europe, just saying, you know, and they happen to be friends of mine that basically said, hey, I want to buy that picture. Can I, you know, are how much money are you making off of this? Can I give you more money by buying it directly?
Right.
So, you know, that was an interesting angle that, you know, all these people know I sell stuff, but it kind of pushed the issue and it made them realize, hey, there's an easy way I can buy this.
Right, right. And I really more did it as a portfolio thing just to show some of my latest work, kind of what I was using Flickr for, because I quit using Flickr. 500 Pics was fun, and frankly, I kind of quit using it too, and I go in there now and then and check it out. So I don't know. A lot of these photo sharing sites seem to kind of have the same issue in the long term. Actually, one that I really liked, I can't remember the name of it now. It's another one that came out a couple months ago, but what you do on this one is you get votes. And everything is ranked based on its votes, but you have to buy votes, not with money, but by voting on other people. So you get credits by voting on other people's photos. And I don't know if it was so much relevant as it was just fun, because you'd go on there and you'd vote on 50 photos, and then you could buy credits and you could use those. If people quit voting on yours, you could use 10 of your credits and put it back into the queue. And it was just kind of fun. And I was really enjoying that for a week or two, and you know, won a couple of their little awards or something, which probably really mean nothing to our clients. I just thought it was fun, and maybe we're talking about the difference between a photo sharing site that I just like to tinker around on versus whether it's actually relevant to our business. I'm not sure if any of them are that relevant to that, because I don't know if these clients are ever really going and finding us that way.
Well, and actually, and I can't remember the name of the site, but it was the founder of Pictage that started a site that has a kind of a weekly competition for photos, and the weekly winner actually wins cash prizes on this. And
nice.
The cash prize size is based on kind of the size of the pool. So, you know, if you're entering a wedding picture, you're in a huge pool, but it's like $1,000 prize every week.
So that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's real money.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I guess the question is, are any of these sites relevant to our business? As I mean, you know, they can be fun, this and that, and whatever you like, but are they relevant to profitability?
Right. Are they,
no
are they generating
as,
new customers, new right, clients,
no,
other than
no
just
such thing as bad publicity?
No, but
right, but eagle stroking is definitely not going to pay the bills,
although it is awful fun. Anybody
it's super fun. It's super fun. That's why everybody posts stuff on all these sites. It's super fun, but unless it's actually getting people to drop, you know, $500,000 on a wall portrait, it's just it does not. You're just sitting there. You're treading water.
Right.
I chalk it all up to marketing.
That's totally a great point there. Yeah, it's putting your name out there or showcasing. Yes, that's right. But I think. By doing that, we shouldn't stay away or far behind of how to sell and keep the SEO up and bring paying customers in.
Right, right. And I'm sorry for the lapse in brains there. The name of that other site is Pixodo, and it's in
Thank
beta
you.
Right now.
Yep, that's the one I was thinking of.
And it has the image duels. And there is some cash prizes there. It's really fun because you just get these two images side by side and you don't have to score it or anything. You just say in that category, it throws them up there and it says, which one do you think is better? So it's fun to vote and it's fun to get votes. Again, I don't know if it's relevant, but it's fun. So that's the one lately, even though I haven't got on there in a few weeks, that I've been having the most fun with, and it's worth checking out. It's free, I think, too. So interesting stuff. Boy, we're just talking about all these random things, which is good. I mean, it's been a while, so we're covering a lot of stuff here. But let's move on from photo sharing sites. Anything else that should be brought up, or should we maybe go into a couple lightning rounds? Anybody want to throw any ideas in the chat for a few lightning rounds? And we're going to be wrapping up here soon, so maybe a quick lightning round to kind of wrap up the day, and then we can go into a couple picks of the week.
Great idea.
Sounds great.
Okay, so let's jump into a lightning round. Jonathan, you threw out a suggestion there for a lightning round. Go ahead. Tell us what you want to talk about. We'll do a quick lightning round here before we get into our picks of the week.
So I'd like to talk about being the best we can be and showing that our clients that professional photography is still a very, very valid thing in today's society of immense content creation out there.
So we're trying to kind of separate that line, that diffusion that we're getting where nobody sees the difference between, you know, a professional photo and a snapshot, and trying to get back to where there's actually a dividing line between those two.
Exactly. It's like, where is the defining point? And everybody is a photographer, yes. And everybody can take pictures now. But is everybody a professional at it that actually can understand how to actually create the image and make it sellable and monetize that?
And among professionals, yeah, how can we stand out? Because it is a very saturated market. It's tough right now, you know. So good topic. What I'm going to do, let's each take, I'll get the stopwatch up here. Dennis, do you trust me to use the stopwatch this time?
We'll see. I'm going to actually secretly also keep time. So if I see it's around 7 minutes for your rebuttal, then I'll know something is up.
You'll know that there's a conspiracy going on. Let's call this one 3 minutes. So let's all just kind of give our different opinions and different approaches for, you know, how we can do that, how we can stand out, how we can raise the bar. And I know this is something we talk about a lot, but I think it's something we always need to be thinking about. We could do a whole show on this. We'll try and keep it concise today. And maybe you'll get some, you know, as listeners and us, all of us here together, we'll get some ideas and some things to work on. So, Mark, do you want to go ahead and start us off on this one? And I will time when you go. And great topic, Jonathan.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. This is actually a topic I was going to bring up, too, because I was going to talk about the value of just focusing what you're doing to be the best that you can be. And where my business really took off is the point at which I realized that when you cross over the circles of what you're good at, what there's a market for, and what you love to do, that's when your business absolutely takes off. I was all over the place in the market. And once I focused on real estate, which I'm good at, I love doing, and there's a market for it, that's when things really took off for me. And what I found is by separating myself away from all the real estate agents and so forth that take their own snapshots, my images of the property show off the property so much better than they were able to before that it positively impacts their business by selling houses faster. And that's really given me a leg up versus the people that are trying to do it themselves, or the people that aren't do it part time, or the people that just aren't committed to doing the best job they can.
Sure. Wow. Are you done?
It's a lightning round, right?
Yeah, but I gave you 3 minutes. So you're not even to 1 minute.
Oh, man.
Any closing thoughts, or are you good?
Well, yeah, no, you know, it's, I certainly have some closing thoughts on that one. It's a case where, you know, there are tons of photographers out there right now, and everybody's got a camera, and everybody can document it, but, you know, in the real estate market, for sure, it's a giant beauty pageant out there where the pictures that look the best get the most eyes on them in terms of web clicks. That gets the most feet in the front door, and the most feet in the front door leads to the most sales. And the agents that have figured that out, that investing in a professional to do this, that impacts their business because now their houses are selling, you know, much quicker than their competition because of the fact that people are looking at their properties online. And, you know, that wouldn't have been possible without really focusing on doing that and doing the best that I can on it. So, you know, kind of wrapping up the topic on that one, there's still isn't, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's weddings or whether it's architecture or food or commercial, if you're better than your competition and people look at your stuff and go, wow, that's awesome, you know, provided it's something that somebody wants to hire somebody to do, you will get noticed doing that.
Absolutely. Very good. Thank you, Mark. And how about you, Gokhan? Let's start you off whenever you're ready. And
I am ready.
Okay, and go.
There you go. I think one of the most important things that we overlook is that you know, our clients, especially I can only speak for wedding photographers, you really have to put your heart into it because that wedding day is nothing but an ordinary day. So it is not just a day, and that's somebody's best day. And if you can put yourself in their shoes and understand, put your heart into it, I know that it is being noticed.
Right.
I will give you a very quick. I'll tell you a little story here. This was a couple years ago, a Greek wedding. Father-daughter dance, amazing music. They're crying. I'm crying. I'm wiping my eyes. I'm still taking pictures. Right after the song, I was hugged from my back so tight I was actually scared. It was the mother of the bride watching them dancing and watching me crying. She was hugging me and squeezing me. We really have to put our heart into whatever we do. And when you sit down with a client,
right,
I like to ask questions instead of telling them, here's what I do, here's what I should do, here's what you should do. No. How do you prepare? How do you imagine? How do you envision your wedding day? Tell me about it. Tell me how you met. Let me know more about them. I can connect to them a lot better when I know more about them. So it's not about me, it's about them. So I will let them speak first.
Excellent.
Oh, I still have a minute left?
You
still
have a minute left.
All right, well, great. Because I could talk 8 hours about it. Seriously, the last time I did Super Monday for PPA, 8.5 hours I spoke, even during the lunch break. And yes, I didn't have my voice for the next 2-3 days. But yeah, I mean, we really have to put our heart into it if we want to even develop our style, because we are all different.
Sure.
You can put 100 photographers in one ballroom, they will all come home with different pictures.
Exactly.
So
very well.
That's about it for me. Yep,
excellent.
Thank you.
Very good. Appreciate it. Good stuff. And Dennis, let's go to you. And I think we're doing great on the timer here. We're making good time. The problem is when you guys go short, that like puts me under pressure to talk less. So that's the only problem I have here with what we're doing. So feel free to take that full 3 minutes, Dennis, and go.
Well, I'll see. I'll see what I can do. Well, as we all know, just by observing both what's on the internet and then also what hits the inside of our mailbox, that lousy photography is everywhere when it comes to different businesses and organizations projecting their image. It's just, there's a lot of lousy stuff. There's some good stuff, but you can really tell the places that, you know, they went, they saved $2,000 by having Janet from accounting, you know, do the headshots of the entire group. And there's a part of me personally that wants to just call them up and say, what were you thinking? You know, this is your headshot for your realtor business, and the aspect ratio wasn't kept, so your head is squished on, you know, 10,000 mailers that they sent out. It's like you want to be that snarky know-it-all photographer guy, but on the other way, you kind of have to be like I might want this person to kind of have to pay me for their for this business, you know, to kind of. But it's amazing how, you know, even though I do mostly weddings and portraits these days, there's the commercial side where it's amazing to see businesses going the cheap route and just doing it on their own because they can save some money. And it really shows, and it's almost like you have to get back up on your soapbox and explain to them, you know, here's why you have to spend $500, $1,000 on decent product photography or headshot photography for their business, because it's basically, this is what's going to make them money, is their image. So a lot of times it seems like that whole, here's, you know, convincing a bride, here's why you have to spend money on a professional photographer. It's almost like that has already entered into the minds of most people who own a business, which is scary. But I think, you know, it's going to be, like I said earlier in the pre-show, it's like, you know, will there even be a business photography industry 10 years from now, except for the very, very high end stuff? So to see businesses leaning that way too, when their image is totally what's going to sell their product and themselves, to see them kind of going the cheap route kind of scares me. But the hope is that there's still many businesses out there that will invest in it and realize that, okay, these images that they see on their website, you know, are going to be the first images that their potential customers or repeating customers will see that really provides a lasting image of what they're trying to sell.
Excellent. Well said, sir. Okay, well, I guess that leaves me, and then we'll wrap up with Jonathan, and I'm going to reset my timer, make sure I'm going to try and be strict with myself. It's okay. You can double check, Dennis.
7 minutes, right?
Everybody else did under three. So
yeah, give him really 7.5. We'll give him 7.5. He's been on the road a long time, so we're good.
Okay, here we go. And go. You know, really great topic. I did an article recently called Learn What the Nail Does Before You Start to Hammer. And I like doing these articles on Pro Photo Show because, I mean, I think they're true, but it also encourages discussion. Some people it annoys. They think I'm just being mean to newbies. Some people, they love it. But the reality is, let's not be fake about our industry. It is incredibly saturated. And I think, like we're all saying, first of all, quality does matter, especially if you're dealing with commercial or products. I mean, it matters with everything, but it astounds me when I see a restaurant and they put their food photos on there and it actually makes me, you know, kind of sick, makes me die a little inside. Well, that's an exaggeration, but it makes their food look worse. It makes it unappealing. And I'm like, why would you do that? Either like, don't even bother or do it right. But and the same goes for the consumer side. I mean, there's a difference between a snapshot. Snapshots are okay. And then there's the photograph. There's something that's really planned out, that's well thought out. And I saw this woman out there. The premise for this article was I saw somebody out doing a portrait on the Bonneville Salt Flats, glaring sunlight, no flash, just like a kit camera. And it just kind of prompted me to say, we need to know our craft. We need to get out there. The image matters. The education, it matters. Learn what we're doing. Don't go out into something that you have no idea what you're working with. Raise the bar. There is a lot of competition out there. It's okay to be new, but don't kid yourself. Unless you find a way to get your foot in there and stand out and find a way to make a plan and to sell something and to be able to make things that make people go, wow, and learn the marketing and the business, you're not going to have a chance. I mean, that's just the cold, hard truth of it. And it's hard to be in this business. It's also great when you can do well with it. The education, planning that image, slow down. I mean, for heaven's sake, a million photos means nothing. What matters is what we put on the wall. What matters is what we do with it. Can we carry that image through? Can we visualize? Can we make something that's going to make a client cry, that's going to make them laugh, that's going to make them say, yes, this is going to sell my product? Think it through. Style is not something you just say, oh, this is my style, because you saw it on somebody's blog. Style is something that takes time. And another one, last of all, and I hit on this heavily in my workshops, and we're going to be dealing with it in the Lights and Shadows workshop at my studio this fall, is presentation and dealing with prints and how you present them and what you do with them. We do all this work for these digital files, and we have high res and we have quality editing and 16-bit and HDR and all this stuff, and then we carry that through and we make an 800 pics and we photo and put it on our Facebook or on our blog, and that's as far as it goes. And what are we doing with these images? You know, so you take great photos. What are you doing with them? That's another article recently on the blog. I'll post it in the links. But that presentation, it's a whole process, raising the bar and teaching our clients. It's us that have to teach the consumer and the clients to see that difference. Because if we can't see it, how the heck are they going to see it? All right. That's all.
Nice.
Under 3 minutes. Okay, that was a great lightning round. You know, I'm not even... Does anybody have any real quick closing thoughts? We don't need to go through everybody, but I think we're pretty much all in agreement there. And it's not picking on anybody. It's not picking on newbies. It's saying we all need to think about this. It's a tough business right now. And I think we all know that, those of us that are trying to be in this business.
Yeah, I actually do have a couple of thoughts, because you said it so well. I couldn't agree with you more. A year and a half ago, my good friend here in Chicago, Nia Gallardo, and I were teaching at a local high school. And I've been collecting old cameras for over 10 years now. And the oldest camera I own is made in Rochester, Minnesota in 1917. It's a box camera and still shoots nice 120 film in 6x9 format. So when I first went to the meeting with the high school kids, I showed them a few photos. And even though they were not like wow or anything like that, but they were carefully taken photos, and they were like, okay, what camera did you use? And when I told them what camera that was used to capture those moments, they were amazed. They were amazed, and they got the message. I was just giving them the example that you have to really feel and think before you click. The right camera is actually just the tool, because a lot of people will think, especially at the beginning, oh, I don't have this kind of gear, I'm not going to be able to take great pictures. No, absolutely not. So the lesson was well taught there.
Exactly. That's great. And I think that, you know, if you're a sculptor and you have a chisel and you just hammer a chisel over and over again into a piece of stone, it doesn't give you something like Michelangelo produced.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's what we do with cameras now. We just like, and oh, six, you know, it's like, oh, well, I have to have this. It does 8 frames a second. I'm like, oh, great. What do you need that for?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's not useful, but you know what I mean. Anybody else have any closing thoughts on this?
It's very true. Like one thing one of my clients just recently told me, we were on a shoot working with some high-tech clients, and they said, we were talking about the whole industry, about photography as well as digital, video, everything like that. And one of their comments that they said to me is, we will hire a professional any day over hiring somebody who is just doing it on the side or on the part. Mm-hmm. The reason being is when we hire a professional, we can guarantee that we will get our product delivered on time within the specs that we want.
Right.
Versus somebody that's doing it on the side or, you know, just, you know, doing it for a lower price or saying, yeah, no, we can do it for sure. They've had the experiences where they've outsourced to those companies or they've given jobs to those companies where halfway through the actual job, the company or the person disappears.
Right.
And then it takes them 10 times as much work and effort as well as money to actually get to where they are. And this is where my client has actually came back full swing with, you know, this is why we are only hiring professionals to do their niche. And it's all about finding your niche within the market, because no matter what market is out there, no matter what market you're in, you'll always be able to find a niche that you can basically create yourself the benefit of being the go-to person for that. And that when this is happening, you're going to be the person to call. Or like if you're a food photographer, this food needs shot, you know, you are the person that we're going to call to get that shot.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Cost is relevant because everybody has budgets these days. But, you know, you can work with your client, work with their budgets and all that type of stuff to get what they need and make sure they get the actual quality they need.
Excellent. Has anybody else had any, not talked, any closing thoughts? Anybody have anything to say?
Good.
Yeah, it was a great topic.
Yep, great.
And just, I challenge myself a lot on this real quick with the 4x5. And I've said this before, I'll go out to a scene that's like some amazing landscape and I'll wait there for sunset. And when it comes, I load up one sheet of film. I've got, you know, I've spent an hour planning for this, or maybe I've spent 5 minutes if I'm in a hurry. And quite frequently, you know, I might take a few. I'm getting to a point where sometimes I won't even pull out the digital. You know, early on when I first started messing with film, I'd kind of do both side by side. And sometimes I still will. Sometimes I'll just use digital for something. But more and more, when I say, no, I'm going to do this on large format, I'll go out there and I'll take one photograph on one sheet of film, and I'll walk away and say to myself, if I didn't get it in one frame, I don't deserve to have it, and I'll do better next time. Now, if I'm doing a client job, you know, I'm going to be a little more flexible than that. But the point is, quantity doesn't make us any better. There's all these things we can think about. We can raise the bar, and it goes from in the camera all the way through to marketing. There's so much involved in it, but let's absorb anything we can to do that. If we can get that back into the industry where people have that respect for a great photograph again. And respect, when I say respect, I mean they're willing to pay for it. I don't just mean they like it on Facebook.
That's one thing digital has done to photography. It made it so easy. And you know the saying, whatever that makes things easy makes you lazy.
Yes, and there's so a lot of that.
Yeah, I do have a quick memory. My mother came to visit me from Minnesota. And I took her to this arboretum, beautiful. And I took my 4x5 camera with me. And she got her little Canon point and shoot that I got her for Mother's Day. And she was tired of me. She's like, you're too slow. And I said, yeah. Okay, this is for you. Let's go and shoot your way.
See, I don't even blink anymore if I spend an hour making one frame. I mean, it's not even an issue to me. I feel good about it. It's incredibly enjoyable and relaxing to me.
Absolutely. I actually had a Chicago wedding photographer here posted on Facebook. I was doing a 4x5 camera photo walk. Yes. And he was like, why are you wasting your time and money on film? You could achieve all these effects on software, which I do own both on One Software and Nik Software, which I love when I use them. Mm-hmm. I use them. That's a different purpose thing. But it's not about the effect. It's about the experience. It's about slowing down. It's about
the
whole process.
Right.
Exactly.
And I won't hesitate to scan a piece of film in and use effects on it in digital. I mean, that's part of
Absolutely.
What I do. But the better
Absolutely.
I get it in camera, the better it is. Okay, great topic, guys. Let's wrap. I know some of you have to go. Let's jump real quick and get a couple of picks of the week out there as we're getting here into spring and wedding season and maybe some cool gadgets people can pick up and just kind of go through that. Who wants to go first? Mark, do you have to run? Maybe you want to get in there first and get a pick of the week.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that. Thank you. So I've got two quick picks, both for supporting your camera. I picked up a new tripod head this week, and I absolutely am in love with it. It's the Manfrotto 410JR, and it's a three-axis geared micro-adjusting head. for doing kind of locked off shots where you need to just really dial in and make sure everything's absolutely level and perfect, like in architecture.
Right.
It's been absolutely wonderful for me, and not a bad price either. I think I picked it up for about $229.
So for about $250, yeah. Great.
Yeah, somewhere right in there. So you compare that versus a high-end ball head, you know, and there's no comparison. It's way more stable, and it's a lot cheaper.
Now, what kind of plate? I'm looking at this. Is this a standard Manfrotto plate, or does it have something special on it?
Nah, it's different than the kind of the standard little Manfrotto plate. It's a bigger thing, but it's also kind of cool. It's drilled out on the bottom for all your kind of standard screw mounts. So, like, okay. You can just screw a monopod right into the bottom of it and leave the plate on there.
Very cool. Very cool.
So that's very cool. And my second quick choice is the support systems from Kessler Cranes.
Yeah,
because if you're into video, they make the good stuff, and they make the good stuff at a good price. Like, it's the stuff for video has to be way heavier duty and way more solid than photography tripods and so forth do. And their $500 tripods are right up there with the $50,000 tripods at some of the some of the cinema houses are selling.
Is there such a thing as a $50,000 tripod?
Once you get into video, Gavin, you would not believe it. Multiply everything times 10. Like a good fluid head in the cinema world is $50,000.
That's
Oh, and just to show you the difference, my Kessler crane tripod that I use for video work. You know, your carbon fiber tripods, they're rated for like 6 pounds.
Right.
My tripod is rated for 250 pounds, and it has a seat as an accessory.
That's pretty cool. Well, and I've been doing a lot of video with the new Exposed series, and frankly, I need a jib crane to do some of the stuff I want to do, and so I'll check that out.
Yeah, I've got the Kessler tripod, the Kessler pan head. I've got the a Kessler 8-foot jib crane and the Kessler Philip Bloom slider, and that stuff just rocks.
Good stuff, good price. It's still not cheap, I'm guessing, but it's less than $50,000.
Yeah, it's not cheap, but again, you compare it versus what other high-end video gear costs, and it's a bargain.
Right, right. Do you have to run right now, Mark, or are you going to hang out with us for the rest of the picks?
I can hang for the rest of the picks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Cool. Jonathan, why don't you go? You got a pick for us this week?
Yeah, so I just received a nice little carry-along camera because I do so much large format and medium format commercial work. Mm-hmm. I was looking for something portable that I could just take a really small kit with me, and we picked the new Fuji X-Pro 1 up with the three lens. They're fixed focal lenses, so no zooms. Mm-hmm. But they're beautifully sharp. It's a great camera. It looks like a old Leica style body. So people are very interested when you're shooting with it. But again, it has no anti-aliasing filter in it and a brand new sensor. So moiré patterns on shirts or anything like that, there's no issues whatsoever. So it is an amazing little carry-on camera. And it's basically, it can fit in a small bag, smaller. Well, it basically goes in my iPad bag.
Nice.
And you can carry it with you everywhere, and you have a three lens kit that produces quality of a 22 megapixel body. It's the Fuji X-Pro 1.
Okay.
So it's the new interchangeable lens by Fuji. So, and yeah, it's a great little camera system.
And so this is the one that's kind of like the X1, except for its interchangeable lenses.
Exactly. So it's, yeah, like the quality of it is really amazing for just what you can get out of it.
Excellent.
And then one of our picks is we just got some brand new canvas printing rolls in, and very, very phenomenal what Hammermill and what Epson are coming out with now, that you don't actually have to overlay and overspray any of your prints or anything like that. You can do beautiful gallery wraps in-house, and super worth it if you're actually looking at doing any large format printing.
Now, what canvas in particular is this?
The exhibition canvas by Epson is, yeah, we just got a bunch of rolls of that. They just released a new version of it, and literally, like, we got it in. We tried to actually make it crack by putting it through a bunch of tests, and we could not make the actual ink crack on it. So even wrapping it and pulling it extremely, extremely tight, it worked perfectly. So
you still have to spray it to protect the ink, though, from like moisture and stuff, don't you?
You do have, yeah. Like, you would spray it to protect it from moisture and UV and stuff like that. Right. But
before where you'd spray it prior, what we're finding out we're doing now is we're actually stretching it all and then spraying it.
Gotcha.
So you get exactly, like, you get no cracking whatsoever on the canvas, which is a big benefit.
Very cool. Well, I tend to be a traditional stripped and mounted canvas kind of guy, but I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Cool. And Dennis, what you got for us?
This time around, I've got, let's see here. My first ever adventure into digital frames.
Nice.
I actually found one that could actually cut it because a lot of them just seemed a little, eh.
Resolution was always an issue.
Yes. So I had, we had to put together a little, little present for the in-laws for their birthday. And I say, you know what? Because I realized that they asked us to update their photos in the frame, like the little flip album we gave them. Right. And the kids were like 1 or 2 years old, and they're like 5 and 8 years old now. So we've kind of been slacking on that front. But we have, what we did basically is loaded up one of these Sony digital frames. The S frame is the one that I went with. It's pretty reasonable, anywhere between 90 and 120 bucks.
Very cool.
Depending on what size, between 7 and 10 inches.
Gotcha.
I had always been hesitant because of the different, aspect ratios, and some of them just look really super cheesy, but these ones held up pretty well. Not as great as a resolution as like an iPad,
right?
Which, you know, once you start getting that $200 to $300 range, if you're looking at some really nice digital frame like that, you might as well just look at an original iPad or iPad 2 for all that. You know, if you're getting in that because you can get a used one, so, but it works nice. It also, a couple of things is that you can hide the logo on it. Like in the front, when you see the picture, it says the Sony logo is very bright. And you're like, ooh, I don't know if I want to have that, you know, blaring in there. But you can turn that off. And it also has, it's also very smart so that if you have a vertical picture, you can rotate the frame to vertical. And it does like the iPhone or iPad. And also, you know, it realizes that you're trying to display a vertical photo. And then so it fills the frame, because that was one of the things I've never been a big fan of, is that if you have a vertical picture displayed on a horizontal digital frame, it's pathetic. It's just no good.
Non-cool.
So, but this way, if you've got it set to display a different picture every 24 hours, which this does, you can rotate it vertical and enjoy the picture the way it was meant to be shot. So.
Proper ratio.
Links in the show notes, and I've been very happy with it, and I'll probably will pick up one or two more here before Mother's Day. Hope my mom's not listening to this, but I don't think she is.
If you really want like print quality, you just get the new iPad and build a frame around it and call it a day.
Exactly.
Of course,
but
it's like a $600 photo frame, but then it looks super, super cool. And anyway, good pick, Dave. Do you have another one, or is that good for today?
That's all I got for today.
Okay. And GoCon.
GoCon.
Go.
All right. Go, GoCon, go. Mine is going to be a rolling case. I had a Calumet rolling case for a few years. I picked up right before flying to Jamaica for a wedding. It had to be something small. And, you know, you can't trust airline people. So after using that rolling case several years and a lot of snow in Minnesota, sand in Jamaica, cobblestone streets in Europe, it got a lot of beaten, and it was still just fine. But a couple days after I returned this year, one of the handles just broke, and it was pretty much useless for me because of the way I was using it. So I took it back to Calumet's store, and they gave me a new one because I actually didn't know it had 5-year warranty, and if they can't fix it right away or whatever, they give you a new one.
Cool.
But I've been starting to show interest in a little bigger rolling case since I don't fly to every wedding.
Right.
And I needed some room for the Mamiya in my rolling case, so I picked up a bigger case. This one I'm actually in love with, I'll be honest with you. It's called Calumet RC2065 rolling camera case. I'll send you a link for the show notes.
Gotcha.
It's very, very well built. I was considering Tenba makes really good cases, Think Tank does, right. And Low Pro does. So I compared them, and price-wise, this was much better buy, and by knowing the quality of the one I had previously, I'm like, this is no brainer. So I picked that one up, and so far I've used it at 2 weddings already and couldn't be happier.
Good stuff. Very cool. And it's pretty reasonable. It looks like it's only a couple $100, which is not bad at all.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Calumet's been around for a long time. I have an old 4x5 lens made by them.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, very cool. And I will jump right in. Did you have another pick, or is that good for today, Gokhan?
That should do for today.
Okay, awesome. I got a couple of quick hits here for you. One of them is an app that I believe is Android or iPhone. This one might just be iPhone. It's called AccuTerra. And if you travel a lot like I do, and I just spent 4 months on the road, and I think I only spent about 6 days of that in a paid campground. The rest of the time, I was just out boondocking, out wherever I could find. And what this is really cool is it's a topo map. It's not a satellite. It's not just a Google map. It's actually a map system that you can go in and you download each area. And you can download pretty specific areas. So first of all, it doesn't just load up like a Google map on the downside, but on the upside, it loads up instantly as long as you've downloaded that area. So you can decide what detail of an area you want to download using this grid system they have, and you just kind of select all the grids you want to download. You download, or there's also pre-built module packs where you can kind of download a whole area, like the Moab area, for example. When we were down there by Moab a few weeks ago, I just downloaded the whole area. Detailed topo maps. But the beauty of this, if you hike and travel, or if you do mountain biking, or you're just trying to get in somewhere and take a photo, is it gives land boundaries. And very, very cool, because it's not just like, oh, national forest, like we see on Google Maps. It will give you land boundaries of BLM land. It'll give you land boundaries of state land. And I'm here to say, particularly with the BLM land tends to be pretty much open. You can just drive in there most of the time and park your camper and call it a day, because a lot of times it's remote land. You know, they just run cows on it now and then and stuff like that. Sometimes it's shocking how much of the land you're driving by is owned by the BLM, which is a government agency, the Bureau of Land Management. But the bottom line is, most of the time you can just use this without paying. In fact, there's laws that they have to follow about charging. They can't just charge for the land use like we see a lot of times in state parks and stuff like that. So cool map system. You can download modules. You can use it all over the place. And even when you're in an area that has no data connection, you can use the GPS with it, see your map. But also you can load up those land boundaries. And it's very cool. Really, really phenomenal for finding spots.
How much is that?
It is, I think the full version was $30. So it's pretty pricey. You can get like the basic version, I think might even be free, and then you got to pay for each module. But the $30 one, I think it was $29.99, and that just allows you to unlimited download any areas you want. So it's rare that I would recommend an iPhone app for that, but there's not a lot of maps out there. I mean, normally to get land boundaries and stuff, you're having to buy like a little local paper, you know, a localized grid map of a certain area. And it's actually a bargain if you travel a lot and really want to know what's going on with that land. There was a spot coming through Utah, and we literally parked the camper right on the little corner of this land boundary, back off the road in these cool little trees. And we were like 10 feet from private land, but we were on BLM land. So it's pretty sweet. The other one, which is actually a physical product, and you guys know I love LEDs. I have LEDs, flashlights, LED lights, LED spotlights in the studio. I'm all over the LED thing. The 160 LED light panel, dimmable, really cool. It's like $30 or $40. We've talked about before. It's a great value. Well, whoever's making these, they're probably coming from China. They keep going further. You can now get a 500 and a 1000 LED panel that actually has barn doors on it. The 500 LED light panel is under $200, which if you're comparing that, how much output it has to other brands that I won't mention right now, you're probably looking at, I would guess, $2,000 to $4,000 to get the same thing. Now, I haven't got one of these yet. Full disclosure, I found this. I've kind of been waiting to get home. It's on my wish list. It's basically the same kind of thing as the other ones we've talked about in the past. It's just larger, and it has some barn doors built in. But I'm really excited about these for my video work, because the LED lights are cool. They don't use a lot of energy, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's getting to be a lot of lights in these. That the 1,000 LED version is only $300, and that's a bargain for a 1,000 LED light panel.
Wow.
These things look pretty phenomenal. So I may talk about these more in the future once I get my hands on one, but I have the smaller 160s, which are battery operated, and I just pack a few of those around because if you need a setup and do a quick video or something like that and you want to light it properly, they're phenomenal for this.
Mm-hmm.
And these bigger ones, I'm seeing a lot of potential. You know, these are getting large enough where, gosh, I may even start using them more for portraits and things like that because they're looking pretty impressive. And the reviews on them coming down on these guys are pretty phenomenal. So people are liking what they're seeing.
Cool.
Check it out. Okay. Did everybody get their pick in? I believe so.
I think so.
Okay.
You bet.
Very cool. Well, real quick, let's everybody shout out their websites or Twitters or whatever you want. And so people can check out what you're doing and projects you got going on. And then we will call this a day. So Gokhan, where can they find you? Thanks for joining us, by the way. It was great to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation. Glad to be here. Gokhan Weddings is my website, G-O-K-H-A-N, as in Nevada, weddings.com. Also, that same thing goes for the Facebook. We're pretty big on Facebook, especially with the photography connections.
Excellent.
I also write a blog, and it's called sundayphototalk.com.
Cool.
It's only for photographers, of course, just to entertain or educate photographers and share some great links or articles.
Cool.
That's pretty much it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Mark, where can they find you at?
Yeah, thanks. I'm at www.markteskyarchitecture.com. That's T-E-S-K-E-Y architecture.com. And I can also be found on Twitter at Mark Teske.
Yeah, Mark, I knew how to spell Teske, but how do you spell architecture?
A-R-C-H-I-T-E-C-T-U-R-E.
He's good.
I will link you in the show notes. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Really a pleasure to have you on. And Dennis, where can they find you? Any new projects? DZPix.com? Anything else going on for you?
No, just the same. Just Google DZPICS and you will find me.
Very cool. Thank you again, Dennis, for being here. You're always a pleasure to have on.
Oh, no, stop. I mean, keep going. Okay, stop.
And Jonathan Belaski, thank you again for joining us. It's always fun to have you. And I have you on so I can say that I know somebody that has cameras that are worth more than I am. No, it's really cool to have you on.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure. And anybody can find me again. Just Google Jonathan Belaski. That's JonathanBelaski. And it'll pull up all my sites there.
Very cool. And you got a blog we were talking about last time. Is that still going on? You got stuff going up there?
Definitely. It's my weekly personal project, and it's at fortheloveofit.ca.
Which is a really, really cool blog.
Yeah, it's a portraiture project that I started, and we're about halfway through right now. So,
oh, you have an endpoint?
Not really, but we're planning a gallery show at the endpoint. So at the 1 year mark. So we'll have 52 portraits at that point. So,
and I just love what you're doing with these because these are so. I mean, it's that whole concept of no. Here's one portrait. It's so thought out. This is actually what got me to invite you to the show in the first place because I said, "Wow, here's somebody that gets it." So
thank you.
It's really good stuff and definitely worth checking out for some inspiration and some good content with each one. Of course, everybody, as always, you can find me and all my projects at SeimStudios.com, SEIMStudios.com. I do have some really cool things in the works coming up this year. Some of them are still secret and I can't let the cat out of the bag yet. Of course, the Exposed Workshop is not, though. You can check that out, SeimFX.com. As well as a lot of just articles and content, f164.com for my pictorials and stuff. And a lot of the images are up from the four-month trip. There is going to be some more, but I think I'm going to end up with 12 to 15 new pieces for my signature collection, which for me is huge to be able to produce that many in 4 months. I'm really excited about it. And there's posts up there with those and kind of that concept of, you know, one image. Here's what I think about it. Here's how it was made. So some tips for photographers on there as well. But you can find all of it at SeimStudios.com. And of course, you can find the show notes, ProPhotoShow.net and ProPhotoShow.net/forum. Head over there and we can talk a little more about all these new cameras and stuff. I'm sure we all have lots of opinions. And you can, of course, go to the comments and the show notes. But the forums are a great place just to kind of have an ongoing dialogue. Head over there to the nice, fresh redesign forums and check those out. ProPhotoShow.net/forum. So in any case, this has been Pro Photo Show, and hopefully we will get the next show out with a little bit less of a broad delay now that I am back home. Lots of stuff planned for this summer, so stay tuned, and we will talk to you all soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. It's been really phenomenal.
Thanks a lot, Gavin.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thank you.
Oops, I forgot to start the recording, guys.
All right, I'm ready. So Nikon came out with the D800.
Let's just do the abbreviated version. D800, 1DX, Photoshop, Lightroom. okay, that was very cool. Thank you, Mark. I know you're kind of running late.
You bet. We'll I got to run, guys. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
Nice talking to you, Mark.
See you, Mark. Mm-hmm.
Thanks Bye-bye. For staying to the end. I'm definitely planning on having this one up in the next few days because I'm heading out on Friday for the annual wall portrait conference, and I'm going to be gone for like a week for that. So I'm gonna get this posted, and, and I'll still be around. You'll still be able to get in touch with me. I'm just going to be heading down to the conference.
Yeah. Keep me posted. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And Dennis, I still want to get you out here. If you're free, just fly on out. We can put you in a tent or something. I don't know.
One of the, you know, I roll with my own tent. I actually have a sleeping tent. Camera bag that turns into a tent. It's one of those nice features. I don't. No, I want to come out there. It seems very Western.
Gavin, where exactly are you located, Gavin?
I'm in Central Washington, so over by Wenatchee, Moses Lake.
How far from Seattle?
Because about 3 hours.
3 hours. Okay, you're a little there. Okay. We're coming to Seattle, my wife and I.
Oh, cool.
We're taking a road trip. She's never been to West Coast. And what I do is I plan my vacations a year or two in advance. And just because I'm a wedding photographer doesn't mean my wife has to have winter vacations all the time.
Right.
So I block a couple of weeks. And at the end of July, we're going to be flying to San Francisco and drive all the way to Seattle, camping and all that.
Nothing like a road trip, GoCon.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
No, and you know what? I would really encourage you to come over to this side too, because the west side is beautiful. But those of us that live on the other side, basically it's divided right down the middle by the mountains. So this side over here is like, you know, the conservative farmer side, and we make the power. And then that side over there is like the way too busy, way too much traffic. They take our power. The west side is beautiful. You got the Olympic Peninsula. There's tons of neat stuff to see, but it's completely a different vibe. So people come to Washington and they go to Seattle and they think that's Washington, and that's only half of Washington. You get to the other side and we have everything from forests to sand dunes to deserts to cliffs, and it's open. There's virtually no traffic on this side. You know, there's Spokane, which is the far side of the state, is the next biggest town after Seattle, and even that, the pace is just so much different. So the vibe on this side is so much different. And, you know, we go visit with them on that side sometimes, but most of it, you know, we kind of over here like, no, let's just make our own state. We got our thing going over here. So we're kind of right in the middle. I mean, it's basically it's a beautiful drive actually over too, which is, you come straight over the mountains. And of course in the summer, you're not gonna have to worry about snow, but you come right through the mountains, and it's not one of those drives that's like 3 hours of nothing. There's actually some really neat stuff, and it just gradually goes over into deserts and farmlands and stuff like that. So yeah, if you get a chance, by all means, come over and come over to this area and just spend a day or two and check out this side too, because if you're down here this close, it's totally worth it. And there's lots of stuff to see. And of course, you're welcome to come by and check out the studio, and maybe we can grill some steaks or something at home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to.
Yeah.
And when you're in the Twin Cities too, look me up.
Hey, definitely, guys. I mean, since I've been listening to you for a while, it feels like, hey, I know you guys for a long time. And even you have other plans or family or anything like that, would love to at least take you guys out for Chicago-style pizza or some coffee.
Very nice. Cool. As long as we can go see the bean, then I'm good. I'll be game.
Come on. You know, I'm so tired of going to Bean. when brides say, oh, I want to go to Bean, I'm like, why? Are you nuts?
What's
Bean? And I was actually there 2 weeks ago. I couldn't convince the bride not to go there. But once she's focused, what we have to do, just go with the flow and have fun and make the experience worthwhile. So what can you do?
Should I know what the bean is?
Oh, if you know, basically the bean in your town would be like the location where brides would want to go on their wedding.
Yeah. You mean Walmart?
No.
Piping Cloud Gates. Yeah.
I see the bean. I've seen this before. This thing's weird. I could build something like that in front of my studio. It might draw people
actually,
in.
Actually, Gavin, we were talking about this the other day when we had the photo walk. Are you familiar with Bob and Don Davis?
Sounds familiar. I'm not sure.
They're like WPPI, PPA kind of like names.
Right.
And very, very modest people for the fame they have. Anyway, since they're from here, they're like an hour from Chicago south. They joined me on the photo walk, and we were talking about how much when I first found out how much that bean cost to the city, I'm like, what? But it brings so many people to come and take pictures and whatever. So it does bring some money back to the city. But anyway, it's something different. You know, you got to be different, or you got to produce something different, or, you know, you got to show something different. You got to be, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that in Chicago, too. They have this team. Sounds like you got to get a bunch of permits and stuff just to take photos, which is really strange to me. That would gall me, but, you know.
Yeah, I actually was stopped by a police officer on Saturday morning, Friday morning, because I had my 4x5 on the tripod. Okay, that's fine. I understand that if I'm stopping traffic, if I'm causing anything, and, you know, people are not very used to seeing 4x5 camera in the city. You know, it's more like Ansel Adams camera, you know.
Right. But the reality is it's none of his business. That's what I would say. That's so probably what I would tell him, actually.
Actually, one of the photographers who was with me is an attorney. So, but in Chicago, you have to have a permit if you're using a tripod.
Oh, brother.
Yep. Telling ridiculous. You. So, and what happened was I just finished focusing with my loop and everything. I was just ready to click, and this person, it was undercover cop, actually. First, it took me a few seconds to try to understand what this person is telling me about, you know. And I saw CPD on the side. I'm like, okay. So as she was talking to me, I just pressed the release, of course. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, but about a couple weeks before I left for Europe, I was in Detroit for a photo shoot, abandoned building photo shoot. And I was shooting with 8 FBI agents, and everybody was all armed. And it was pretty safe, yeah, yeah. Those buildings are claimed by different gangs, so they stash their guns and drugs in those buildings.
Right.
So last year or a year before, there was a photographer who was killed in those buildings.
Wow.
So going there with agents, it was pretty safe, and hours of shoot, no problem.
Huh, interesting. Yeah,
and we come back to the bean. I actually met this FBI agent in front of bean. He had his tripod taking pictures. He was visiting Chicago with his 21-year-old son. And we started talking. I had my 40-some-year-old TLR around my neck. We were just meeting up with a couple other photographers. And we start talking about this and that. And he gives me his card. I'm like, FBI agent, special agent. I'm like, I know it's illegal to make cards like that. I'm like, I'm sure this is real. And he's like, yep. But I love photography. So,
that's so interesting.
He invited, and I took a couple of photographers with me from Chicago, and a friend of mine is a model and had family by Detroit. So we went there for a couple of days and had a good time.
Well, it's probably a good thing I don't live in Chicago, because I'm one of those guys that gets incredibly frustrated and am very vocal about the fact when my government charges me for things that I paid for in the first place.
Absolutely.
But so,
Chicago being the most corrupt city in the country, you know, it's all for a reason. They call it corrupt for a reason, yeah.
It's all for money. Like, oh, we can charge these people for a tripod, for heaven's sake. I mean, most places, even like a national park, the line is pretty much drawn at, like, if you're bringing in models and sets and stuff like, you know, and really getting serious, you have to have a permit. At least that's somewhat reasonable. But to say, oh, you can't even use a tripod without a permit, that's just extortion, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, if it's commercial work, I understand that to a degree. We had a trash to dress session in a forest preserve here a year ago, and we were pretty crowded, and we had to have a permit, and we did, and showed proof of insurance just in case one of those people who came to the event was smoking and throw something and then cause fire. You know,
I guess my
piece on this table, but putting a tripod permit, come on, give me a break.
I think, frankly, it's all overkill. I mean, let's say you are doing a commercial shoot. They say, oh, well, you're making money on it. Well, okay, you're making money, but by working in making money, you're paying more taxes. You know, you have business permits, so you're already paying through the nose just to be in business. And the more money you make, the more money they get. And I'm thinking, you know, when does this end? But don't get me started.
No, I know. I listened to you rant about that, and I couldn't agree more. So
yeah,
totally agree. Yeah.
Well, at least there wasn't any photos. That's embarrassing. Awkward. Well, I just have to say, GoCon, anybody who has done winter camping in the BWCA and has learned photography by shooting film and still shoots film, I just want to thank you for being on the show, because I'm a fan already.
You know what I love is that more and more people are talking about film cameras, and I like to think that I've started a trend.
Well, you gotta be careful, because there's people who like to stand by medium format and smaller format film cameras and don't know anything about them. And then there's the people who actually learned how to shoot with them. Actually,
give them a 4x5. You have to go to training just to load the film.
Geez, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
For two years, I've been doing film-only photo walks.
Nice.
And what I did over the years, I collected quite a few cameras and also some extra cameras from my Canon days. I still keep them. Just in case my Nikons don't work. Anyway, what I did was I was really trying to spread the word and also give that feel to a new generation. Because I'm 36 years old, and I totally understand new 18, 19-year-old people who love taking pictures but had no opportunity to take pictures on film anyway. So what we did, I actually provided film cameras, and I told people, just even if you bring a disposable camera, which was actually my very first camera,
right,
bring it, and no digital allowed.
Nice.
And I literally sat down and showed how to load film on a 35mm camera and a medium format film camera several times. But yes, sometimes you can tell people are like, oh, what is that? How do you spell film? You know, PH? But some people were really hooked up. And I actually have now maybe half a dozen wedding photographers in Chicago started collecting old cameras and getting the experience, getting the feel, and trying to understand that.
Right.
So just one of those... Cool. Workshops we did, not the workshops, but walks we did last weekend was 4x5 only.
Very cool.
And it was called 4x5.
You also stand out. I mean, when I go in 4 months of traveling, not one other person out there in any national park anywhere I went with a 4x5. I don't even think I saw one film camera the whole time. So.
Surprise me. Yeah,
I mean, there's just not that many. Although it's encouraging because I am seeing there is a following, and I think it's gradually increasing, which is good because I want them to keep making the film. You know, I don't want it to go away. I mean, I realize digital is practical, but I think film. I'm actually working on a new series of portraits in the studio, and there's not going to be a rule that I won't do digital. But it's called the American Originals Collection, and the goal of this is contrasting to like a senior portrait session where you know you have a whole bunch of photos and they choose from their 30 or 40 proofs. The goal of this is one setup. It's one, you know, probably my plan is with this is to plan it, you know, kind of a little Arnold Newman inspired, but 4 frames of 4x5 film is the whole session. And it's basically just one pose, maybe two color, two black and white, or maybe just either or, but, you know, sit down with these people, plan how we can make something really that's them, that's a really unique, timeless portrait. And all we need is one. And that's kind of my thing with this is, you know, it's going to be a different price set. It's going to be kind of a headshot series, but beyond that, and just kind of a high-end 4x5 film, large format. You go in there, we set it up, we light it, and we take those 2 to 4 frames, and that's their portrait.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Like, you'd be really surprised, like, on my personal project there. Like, I think the maximum amount of frames that we take on a a set there is because, like, I've been trained classically in 4x5, 8x10, and all that type of stuff is, you know, 20 to 40 frames, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So, and everybody's like, what do you mean you have it? Didn't you, you know, you know, you're not taking 100 or 200 shots? It's like,
it's irrelevant. No,
it's like, look at the laptop. You know, we're shooting perfectly. It's lit perfectly.
Yes.
We got the frame. Like, even if it's the fifth shot, I stop right there and be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. No, so, that's the way to think.
Even though, like, we've done just 2.5 hours worth of pre-production, pre-lighting, hair, makeup, all that type of stuff, if I get it in 5 frames and it only takes me, you know, 15, 20 minutes, yeah, we're done. It's excellent. Good.
Yeah. So. That's the way it should be. I had experience with a couple of people here. I was photographing their engagement session, and they were, I think, hoping to see like 150 pictures. Yeah. And when I handed them, after 2 hours of session, when I handed them like 45, 46 pictures, yeah, she was like, this is it? How many did you delete? I'm like, maybe like 5 or 6 that you blinked.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's there. There's one Chicago photographer. I haven't personally met him. That's actually a shame, but he did a Kickstarter project. I think it was like had a big camera on a trailer. He was photographing people on like 5-foot and 6-foot film.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
That was the guy that was doing wet plates, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, not a wet plate. No. It was a wet plate. But this guy's project actually failed to meet the high number they put up for Kickstarter. I actually gave like $35. But, you know, with Kickstarter, excuse me, if you can't meet the number you put up, they don't charge you. Right. I mean, nobody's taking your money. But it was kind of a neat project because there is so much to be preserved in America. It's just incredible, especially coming from a different background.
Yeah.
My view is completely different, and every corner of this country is just like gold. It's so beautiful. Everything you need is right here in front of you. And it's so unfortunate to see and run into some people like they haven't, you know, left their state, which on the other side, I probably travel like 14% of the world, and I'm 36 and I can't get enough of it. And I've seen more than half of the country, and I loved all every bit of it, from Alaska to Florida, California to New York. I was in Quebec City, Jonathan. I loved it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous up in Quebec City. So
really
gorgeous. So it's one of those things. It's like so many people have not experienced film, and like for example, like today, I just ran the Ontario Skills Competition for photography students in high school. And not one of those students competing in that competition have touched film. And, you know, even like one of the interview questions for our HR people today was, what is middle gray in photographic terms? And one person out of 41 contestants got that it was 18% gray. And I'm like, well, what are they teaching you in high school? What are they teaching you in these photographic or high skills majors courses that you're taking in high school now? And they're like, oh, it's all about, you know, Photoshop, digital work, that type of stuff. And I'm like, so they're not really teaching you photography. And a lot of students looked at me like, well, yeah, they are. And it's like, okay, that's fine. So like their assignment today was like, they had to do a still life and a portrait, environmental portrait on the competition site with all the other skills competitors. And their still life was to take a still life photo that's very compelling of a plain 8.5x11 sheet of paper. And you'd be very surprised. We only had one out of the 41 students actually do something very creative with that. The rest of them, it was like roll it up or origami. That's all that they could think of. So it's like their creativity wasn't there yet. Like it's very interesting because like before when you're dealing with film, it was you know, we would learn black and white. It was all about lights and shadows, contrast, shape, form, everything like that. Now what they're teaching in high schools is, yeah, no, take a picture and then let's see what we can do with it in Photoshop.
Just putting it together, it always challenged me because, you know, here's stuff I use, but I'm like, okay, I need to be able to talk about ratios and actually give you all the reasons. And this is this. Here's the different types of meters. This is how they all work. So, I mean, I'm going to divide all this into chapters. So for things that people already know, they can kind of skim over it. But some places I was at, it was shocking. Like White Sands blew me away because I went out there and I'm sitting here making a video talking about, okay, now here we have this light. We're probably looking at a one stop, maybe one and a half stop difference between this over here and that over there. And I'm talking on my video. And then after I get back, I'm like, well, I better check that on the meter. Cause you know, here I am just thinking I can do it off the cuff. Have either of you been to White Sands?
No,
nope.
I haven't.
More sunrise. Okay. Sun's like coming up, like your strongest, most richest shadows of the day at White Sands. The difference between the shadow side of a dune and the highlight side is a third of a stop.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. So the image I did, so I would go to these places that would present these challenges that I can then say, all right, here's the image ultimately that I made from that, and this is the challenges it presented. Because on that image, I had to visualize. I had to say, all right, I only have a third of a stop. And to my eyes, it seemed like there was shadow there. I mean, you know, because your eyes are sensitive. We pick that up. But you put a meter on it, and it's like a third, maybe two-thirds of a stop at sunset from highlights to shadows on these dunes because they're all white. So they're all a huge reflector for each other.
Yeah.
And I was really in shock when I realized what a tiny ratio there was between the lights and the shadows, because what that meant is in a photograph, everything looked flat. So I had to not, you know, I had to get it as close as I could in camera, but then I had to plan through for, okay, I'm going to have to burn this down. I'm going to have to carry that through. I got to, because in a photograph, I need more than a third of a stop difference.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Oh, definitely.
I would have to say, if I'm being honest, Gavin, I think Blue Suede Dunes from your trip was probably my favorite image.
Thank you.
From the whole thing.
I think I might agree with you. And that one and the Sliver Moon Blues.
Sliver Moon Blues is the one with the moon above the water.
Yes, and that one I couldn't believe. Yeah, I mean, I'm like, this is cool. I like this. But that one, what I'm learning about these pictorials is there's certain things. There'll be things that I'm like, oh, I did great on this. Or maybe it's like, you know, this iconic spot in a national park or something. But people have seen all that before. It seems like what they really respond to is scenes that they aren't necessarily familiar with and that they can kind of interpret in their own way and just do their own thing with. Does anybody know, are any of you guys moon? Dennis, you're kind of a nerd sometimes with the night stuff, aren't you?
If you mean, was I published in 1999 in Astronomy Magazine? Yes.
Yeah. Okay, then look at Sliver Moon Blues. Is there a name for this moon? Because I don't remember ever seeing a moon. This is not a full moon. It's a sliver moon, and yet I can see the whole
thing.
It's
a sliver moon. So what it is basically is that the sun's light is bouncing off of the rest of the Earth and then filling in the darks, the shadowed part of the moon. But to our eyes, we can't see that shadowed part.
I could even see it, though, that night. It was so bright, I could see it.
Yes. In the desert, I'm sure you can because there's less atmospheric disturbance and stuff.
Okay.
But most of the time, our eyes can't register that. Sometimes you can. Like, if you really concentrate, you can see the shadowed part of the moon.
Right.
You can kind of pick out the details.
I just couldn't believe how bright it was.
But the camera, left open, obviously, absorbs all that light. And that's great because the part that was actually probably visible mostly is that really white sliver.
It was, but it was all remarkably bright, which is why it blew me away. Is because normally the moon can be a real challenge, as you know, because it blows everything else out. So everything else gets dark to expose the moon, and then you get an HDR and you get halos around the moon. And you know, here's this scene where I'm able to balance the two out, and other things are certainly darker than the moon. But I just couldn't believe how much I've never been able to get that kind of detail out of it. Because it was visible. Now, hold on, though, stepping back to what you said. Are you saying that when the moon isn't full, the rest of it's still there? Because I thought it, like, went on vacation or something. It's all there?
No, it's all there.
It's actually still at home.
Sorry to be a buzz.
It's just in shadow. Yeah.
Yep, it's not really cheese either. But the moon is one of those. If I remember back to my early days of starting to get into astrophotography back into, like, the early 90s with film. And the moon is one of the most, and still is, one of the most frustrating things to photograph.
It's horrible. It's the hardest thing to photograph in my opinion.
Because it always looks like what your eye sees is always so cool, and there's so much depth, and there's so much dynamic range. And you try to capture it on film, And for, to the most people, it just looks nothing like what they saw.
It's either too small, or it's blurry, or it's blown out. It's always
blown
something.
Out. Yeah, people don't realize that if you want to catch the details on the moon, you have to basically observe daylight rules of shooting. You know, shooting
which
at 250 of it. Yeah, 500. Yeah, exactly. So you get details on the moon, but you see nothing in the foreground, which is why, like on your shot there, it's an extremely new moon. So you know that you've got some sunlight still from the setting sun.
Right.
And then same thing goes with a full moon or a couple of days before the full moon. You've got enough sunlight to give your foreground some light, some lighting, and give you at least some sort of feel for where you are.
It was really cool. I kind of wish my Blue Suede Dunes had that same moon, because the moon was actually setting here. So it was going down. So I don't know what they call it when it sets early. But I guess they call it setting.
I believe you've got a waxing crescent.
Is that what they call that? See, he knows. He's giving me a moon-dication.
You gotta know your lunar cycles. I mean, come on, it's basic.
I wish because there's some. We have some really great apps for like the sun that tracks it and it shows you where it's going to be out in the sky and like it virtually, like on this camera. I wish there was something like that. I can't find one like that for the moon where it actually shows you in the sky exactly where the moon is going to be at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moon always throws me off. Because the sun is relatively consistent. You know, it's longer in the summer, it's shorter in the winter, and it's like, you know, it's gonna follow the sky and do this, and you can pretty much, you know that, like, you know, if you're today, I know that like next month it's gonna be doing relatively the same thing, just a little later in the day. But the moon seems to be all over the map. I mean, it must have like shorter range of like what it does. Because like one day I'll look up and I'll be like, hey moon, sup man, and it's like setting, and it's like 6 o'clock. Yeah, it's just sunset and the moon setting, and then I'm looking the next week and it's like, you know, 11 at night, and here's the moon high in the sky, and I'm like, dude, what's going on?
Check out one app that I use a lot for the iPhone is Moon Phase.
Okay, is that pretty good?
MoonPhase. It might be a couple bucks.
Right.
But that one keeps a really good track on that sucker and gives you what time it rises, the azimuth, so you know where on the horizon it's gonna rise. Right. And then we've also got a super moon coming this coming weekend, which basically the moon travels around the Earth in an elliptical pattern, not a complete circle.
Right.
So there's some times where the moon is actually physically closer to the Earth.
Okay.
So I think the full moon coming up here, I think on the 6th, May 6th, is going to be super bright.
Now, they always like to talk about it in the news, and then they show these photos that are totally fakey where it looks like the moon is 4,000 times bigger than it really is.
Well, yeah, that might be a little bit of
a composite. Just to clarify, somebody said the super moon is still bigger, but it's not really that much different. Is that true, or is it quite a bit larger?
It's pretty big. I mean, it's not like super big, but I mean, one of the photography groups I'm involved with, I think it's Night Sky Photography. One of the guys who is the administrator on that posted a side by side comparison of what the moon looks like usually to compared to what this super moon will look like, and it was pretty. I mean, it's pretty noticeable. I mean, if you're just like not paying attention to it, obviously you're not gonna.
It's not like they pretend on the mainstream news media where it's like the moon is going to be so big it's going to be like crushing you as it passes overhead.
No, that'll happen. That'll happen, I think, next year. I don't know.
Okay.
I posted a link to show you at the bottom. If you scroll to the bottom, it shows you the very closest it'll be, and then the farthest it'll be in November. So it's pretty good. I mean, it's
pretty big. Yeah, like the difference in size.
Yeah,
it's
not like.
Super big,
super, all caps, super.
So it's like 30% bigger or something like that.
I'll say 20-30%. Sure.
Okay, that's pretty super.
Oh yeah, back in my day, I think it was an early issue of 1999 astronomy photo of the month, nice. Full page back spread. That was back with, I think I shot it on Ektachrome slide film.
Sweet.
And I think right after I shot that photo, we went to the midnight premiere of Star Wars.
Like when it
Phantom
came out?
Phantom Menace? No, okay. No, not like
I'm like, are you that old?
1978.
Okay, just
I did see Return of the Jedi in the theaters, but no, this would have been the when they started up the new ones, so A New Hope, I think.
They keep doing, they like, you know, they add a minute of footage and re-release it in theaters.
Don't get me started.
I'm getting old now, but I reminisce about the 90s, and I'm like, you know, the 90s had its problems, but people were so much more down to earth, and you didn't have all this weird junk going on in the world, and
you know, the life prior to Facebook, right?
So. Yeah, it's like, come on, 90s. And I watch 90s movies, and I'm like, sweet, girls actually wore their hair nice back then. It wasn't like this fab where you just shave it off and then they
a lot of bangs. You had to have a lot of product to keep those bangs.
I know,
up.
But it's hot, man. Like all that hair. Really? My wife's hair is like down to her waist right now, and I'm like, dude, like the 80s hair. Yeah, it was big, and sometimes I'm like, okay, did you have to curl it that much? But you know what? It was feminine, and that's hot.
I'm telling you, the heyday for hair lighting had to have been like in '89 to '92.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just bangs to the max.
It was like golden beauty, like flowing everywhere.
Wait, did that sound? And we're done.
I didn't mean that in a bad way. I meant that in hair sense.
No, I know. I just say I think we're cooked.